This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Higher! Not that high! Stay in sync! 1, 2, 3! Thrust it! Come on, thrust it! Bob! Okay. That's enough. Thank you, ladies.
Oh. Good job.
Okay. Work with honor turns. I'm worried about her balance.
All right. How long do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
Tonight?
You'll be fine.
How did she do?
She's no butterfly. Tony, she's all pelvic thrust. I mean, she prowls.
Change your spot.
She's got it.
I wonder how she got it.
Well, she certainly didn't learn it.
She learned it all right, but they don't teach it in any class.
Funny because it's bad. It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of Geektober and the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live, I say, from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for quality and amusements of all varieties. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, I Am He, drawn near that ye might be entertained and informed. On this Thursday, it is Thursday, October 7th, 2010. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program. 503-505-6964. Here's the great thing about this Skype program, you know, how people can interact with this telephonically or whatever. You know, it's sort of like an instant messenger and a telephone. You know, it's like Google Voice or one of those things. And so people have the sort of status messages next to their neighbors. It's like, I am available, or I am away, or I am currently pleasuring myself to pictures of Alyssa Milano. I will get back to you at my earliest opportunity. Or you can be like our listener, Brandon, who's... And it makes you wonder, like, what the genesis of this is. And I don't really know. I mean, I think I actually prefer not knowing, because having it be a mystery is much more entertaining. Brandon's status is just, suck it, mofo. And it's like, I don't know whether, I mean, not to sound more important than I probably am, I don't know whether he got Skype, like, just for this show, because some people said they downloaded it just so they could sort of, you know, they could sort of message us, or they could, they could call in or whatever, or some people already had it. So I don't know whether that's directed at me, or whether it's directed at the world in general, or if it's just kind of the motto by which he lives his life. In which case, I wish I could get it translated into Latin and just have it mounted on a plaque in the front of my home.
He sounds very angry.
Yeah, but you know, in a way that's sort of right below that, a guy's status message is just bleh. And then a guy, the guy below him, his status, this guy Tom, Tom's status message is, each new day is a piñata of pleasant surprises. So we've really got the whole spectrum of the human condition. All of the various stripes of the human experience are listed right there.
If you get Tom and Brandon together in one room, one of them might explode.
Exactly. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. You can also message us directly on Skype if that's your pleasure. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our username there, Rick Emerson Show. Or you can email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. That's how you can do all that. Yes, it is, Dawn. That's how much we care about the audience. We don't give them not just a singular way, not just a secondary way, not a tertiary, not a quartiary way. There are, in fact, like 75 different options for communicating your various thoughts and observations and ponderings to us here at the show. You can also go to the text box on the website, which And I keep saying this, but we never really do it. Well, we have to switch at some point. Where, you know, we'll have you man, you know, like the phone or the Skype messages or whatever, and then I'll look at the actual text box. Because the text box just seems to be a hotbed of sort of you know, the political and social discourse and all kinds of ruminations and natterings about the program.
Some days the text boxes are very quiet.
Really?
Other days, they're just
lively and hopping.
Yeah, I'll look over it, and it doesn't seem like really anybody's there. Also, the whole Meebo program is really, I used to think, like, oh my God, nobody's listening. There's nobody there. And then it's been explained to me that Meebo is an imperfect system, and a lot of times people will be logged in, but you don't actually see them. They don't actually show up.
It's a bit of a tempestuous, it's a temperamental program.
Right. So I don't let it hurt my feelings anymore when I look over and there's like, you know, two names, you know, listed or something. Because then you'll start talking about something in particular that for some reason will like
strikes a chord.
And then suddenly it's like, boom, 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 boom. The little boxes all light up. And I'm going, I swear to God, there were only three people logged into Meebo. And now they'll be like, you know, 8, 9, 10 people just going, hey, let me tell you about the iPhone. Let me tell you about goats.
Is that like if I were to say, why, Don, I can't seem to remember what film character was animated using Alyssa Milano's body as the model. It's escaped my memory. I used to know that it seems like somebody created an animated character at one point, and the animated character's physique was based on that of Alyssa Milano. But I'm sure that somebody knows somewhere in this great big crazy world of ours. I only know that I do not have that information any longer. In any event, coming up later on today, we'll talk to Mr. Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and Red Summer. He's going to be showing his film Miss Sarajevo, and it's going to be happening at PSU. It is going to be happening at PSU tomorrow. That is Friday, and then he'll be speaking at Woodstock this Saturday, talking about Red Summer, which is his book about a few summers spent in an Alaskan fishing village. We'll talk to Bill Carter later on today. Listener Jenny is going to be in the studio with us in the 2 o'clock hour. Jenny's going to be counting down the top 5 Pearl Jams, the dislike of which would make you a dick. Bam! There we go, right there. It's the first time I've said that correctly.
But you didn't. You said the top 5 Pearl Jams.
What did I say?
You didn't say. You meant to say the top 5 Pearl Jams songs.
No. I'm creating my own lexicon there,
Pearl
Dawn.
Jams.
No. I'm contracting it all down. I'm not.
I'm not buying it.
No, I'm not. No, and if I were, that would just make me a douche. You know, that would just if I really referred to Pearl Jam songs as being Pearl Jams.
Yeah.
Which is a sort of phrase I could probably sell, actually. I could, you know, that's the kind of thing that I could just, that's terminology that I could go pawn off on some DJ somewhere for like $7, $8, $9. Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Thursday.
Gubernatorial candidate Dudley donated his home for a burn and got a big tax donation. There's toxic sludge creeping all over parts of Hungary. And a man claims he was drugged and raped by a gang of women.
Okay. Sort of the snoo-snoo kind of effect. All right. So we've got that Penis Watch coming up today. Also, Democracy on the March. And I have yet to do that. I meant to post this yesterday afternoon. I just didn't have it. There's too much going on. But later on today, I will get somebody has to see the pumpkin carving in which I have been depicted as, and I believe it now is Stalin. I was unclear about whether the guy was actually carving a pumpkin to depict me. First of all, the idea that a guy is carving my face in a pumpkin is equal parts sort of great and creepy. I mean, there's something sort of glorious and one might even say Stalin-esque about that. But I couldn't figure out if it was Stalin or if it was Lenin or if it was, in fact, Hitler. So I actually spent a fair amount of time yesterday on Google Images just looking at a picture of the guy's, the pumpkin that the guy had made for the Geek-O-Lantern contest, and I'll get that posted later on today. But looking at the pumpkin and then looking at pictures of Vladimir Lenin and then looking at the pumpkin and looking at pictures of Joseph Stalin and then looking at the pumpkin and looking at pictures of Mao Zedong, then pictures of Hitler, and trying to figure out what he was really going for. And I've come to the conclusion it was Stalin. So now I can say with some sort of with certainty, I can say definitively.
Now was he carving a thing of Stalin and then it just happened to look like you? Or did he actually set out to do you as Stalin?
Well, the latter seems more likely in a strange way than the former. Because, I mean, how would you start carving a thing of Joseph Stalin and then say to yourself, my God, this doesn't look so much like Joseph Stalin as it does Rick Emerson? I mean, the odds of that happening really seem necessarily finite and minute.
I don't know.
There's 6 billion people in the world. I mean, what are the odds that he was starting? First of all, the odds that a guy... Think mathematically what the odds would be that a guy would carve a pumpkin, A. B, that he would carve a pumpkin to look like Joseph Stalin. C, that he would try to be carving Joseph Stalin's likeness and it would end up looking like me anyway. D, the fact that a guy who would be carving a pumpkin to look like Joseph Stalin would accidentally carve something that looked more like me and also be a listener to the show. I mean, that's like 5 quadrillion to one.
I don't know. When I was in culinary school, we had this assignment where we had to do bread dough sculptures that would be something that would be appropriate for some sort of a buffet. And I did Elvis nailed to a cross. You may have seen it. It's in my bathroom.
Yes, I have seen it.
Except that once I was done making it, because he's made out of bread dough, he actually looked more like Roy Orbison.
Okay.
So it could have been something like that.
Well, I like to think, and maybe this says more about me than it does about the carver, I like to think that really, when he thinks Stalin, he thinks Emerson. And really all of the time. And so when it came time to carve a pumpkin, those are the two things that leapt immediately to the forefront of his mind. In any event, don't forget...
It does for many of us, actually.
Well,
I'm just saying.
Then my plan is working. Maybe it'll be like Stalin, one of these where like, you always hear that story about Stalin where he died. And it was like 4 or 5 days that he was dead before they figured it out because everybody was afraid to go into his room because he would just have you and your entire family liquidated. And it was a lot of, you know, Comrade Stalin, it has been, would you like coffee? A little scone? Something? Please do not kill me. I am only interested in your welfare, Comrade Stalin. Oh. And he was just sitting there moldering away. But everybody was just so convinced they were just going to end up in a landfill in Siberia. Anyway, don't forget, the Geeko Lantern contest is happening all through the month of October. And so you go to rickemerson.com to find out more details on this. We're giving away a $100 gift certificate to thinkgeek.com, as well as a smattering of prizes and merchandise from that fine online store. So all you got to do is you got to carve or decorate a pumpkin or, you know, other vegetable or fruit type product. I guess I will accept this sort of me as Stalin, carving is falling under the umbrella of geekery. You just carve your geek-o-lantern to the best of your ability. You send a photo of that to contest at rickemerson.com. And at the end of the month, we'll pick 4 of those. And those folks will win the Think Geek stuff. So there you go. You can find out more about that at rickemerson.com. The reason I didn't get to this last night is because when I left the studio, it was just... It feels at this point like I've been awake for about 9 days. And I know logically that that's not the case, but I gotta tell you, it is just... It's like Keith Richards talked about being on tour when he'd be out with the band. And it's like, you know, normally when you're sleeping and waking up and sleeping and waking up on a regular schedule, your brain compartmentalizes. And you get things sort of segmented into what happened on Monday, what happened on Tuesday, what happened on Wednesday. But when you stay awake for a long enough period of time, it's just like one big entry in your head that just goes back for like 5 days, and you can never really remember when anything happened.
Well, what? Because I came in, you had to drive Laura to the airport, and this morning you just said you were tired. What time did you go to bed last night?
I went to bed at like midnight,
and then got back up at 3.
Then I got back up at 3 to go to the airport with her. And then it was just that whole thing of like, and then there was, it wasn't like I was able to drive, you know, because you have that whole thing if you have to get up really, really absurdly early where you think to yourself, okay, it's amazingly early. Should I, in fact, be ingesting any caffeine? But then you realize you can't not do that because then you're not going to be able to drive. I mean, the idea that I would be... I mean, it would have been more irresponsible for me to put myself on the highway driving a 2,000-pound box of steel and glass without having any caffeine in myself. But then, of course, the caffeine just renders me unable to go to sleep.
I'm curious as to why you didn't, I don't know, go to bed earlier if you knew you were having to get up at 3.
Because it doesn't do any good. Because going to bed at 10 o'clock just means I'm just going to be sitting there staring at the ceiling for 2 hours. I mean, there is no falling asleep before midnight for me. It doesn't matter how tired I am. It does not matter how long I've been awake for. I've tried, the only thing that really might work there is like some heavy duty sleeping agent, which of course is then going to mean again that I can't drive anywhere responsibly at 3 in the morning. So I have learned in my 37 years on this planet that I am essentially physically incapable of falling asleep before midnight. It just doesn't happen. There have been times, I mean, I say without exaggeration, there have been times when I've been awake for 36 hours at a stretch because I've been working a couple different jobs or I've been finishing a project or something, and I'll get to the end of a day and a half of being awake and it doesn't really, but, you know, I still can't fall asleep. I can't, you know, I just sit there and I just, my mind just continues to just, you know, like some centrifuge as I stare at the ceiling, just wondering, you know, just wondering about, just focusing on unimportant crap. And in fact, the longer I am awake, the more difficult it becomes to fall asleep. So there's just, it's just a road to nowhere. So I got up this morning at like 3 and I, you know, I took Laura to the airport. She's doing this whole like whirlwind tour of like 5 different continents or some damn thing over the next 5 months or whatever, or the next 5 weeks. So, you know, so there's that. But I, all the stuff to do yesterday afternoon, so I had to go to an Office Depot at one point, and it's that thing where it's the sort of paradox of the store where when, and this is not just Office Depot, but it's like when you don't, when you just want to be left alone to shop, that's when everybody sort of descends on you, you know, and they just want, you know, they want to tell you about all the specials they're having and all the sales that are going on, and they want to give you all the details about all the various items, and you just want them to leave you alone. But then as soon as you have a question about something, then they can't be found anywhere. And especially at a store like Office Depot, where you're just wandering up and down these like cavernous aisles trying to find someone, and you, I mean, you feel as though everybody in the store has effectively just gone on break at the same time. So I'm wandering around, I can't find anybody, and I was like, I was 1 second away from just picking up that phone that's attached to the pole in the middle of the store that they just use to communicate with each other and just doing like an all-store page to demand that somebody help me, when a guy sort of magically appeared from behind a shelf and he said, "Hey, you know, finding everything today, sir?"
He said, "No, and no, I'm not."
And I just said, it was the greatest exchange ever. I just said, "Yes, I have a question." And he just chucked me on the shoulder and he said, 42.
Oh, my God.
And then he just stared at me for a while. And then there was this long silence where I wasn't quite sure how to respond to it. And then I just, you know, I asked him some question about, you know, like this external drive or whatever that I was buying. And he told me the answer, and I said, "Okay, thank you." And he said, "No problem." And then he walked off, and as he was rounding the corner, and in my mind's eye, he's sort of disappearing like River Phoenix, like in Stand By Me. And as he ran to the corner, he just shouted, like, "Best show ever!" And then I went to find him later, and he was gone. It was the weirdest thing. It was like I'd fallen into some strange, like a very special Christmas episode, you know, of my so-called life, where I run into another student who's very helpful. Then it turns out she's an angel who died on this spot 20 years ago. It was like I conjured him. It was so bizarre that I actually wondered if my subconscious had manifested him like some sort of customer service Tyler Durden. You know, that he appeared and the first thing he did was a Douglas Adams riff. And then he was, like, shouting, "Best show ever," as he, like, went over the horizon. And then I couldn't find him later. It's like, and I went to track him down to say, like, you know, if he was a listener, which it seems like he probably was. Because I was going
to... Unless I mean, that was just a sheer coincidence that he would shout that at you.
You know, unless I've just gone completely, like, nutty. So I went to find him to thank him for listening. And it was like, he was nowhere to be found. And it was like, he rounded the corner, and then I followed him. And like 2 seconds later, I went around the corner, and he was gone. There's nowhere he could have gone to. And I was actually going to go ask somebody. I'm like, "Hey, have you is there a guy named Tom here? He's about to see this eye, you know, red hair, and just ask what it." But I developed this like really weird paranoid fear that they would say, "Why, no one's seen Tom since that night 15 years ago." And then it just weirded me out, and I had to leave. So I just. Anyways, I just spent this whole day running all of these errands. And, of course, while I'm running you know, a whole bunch of my own errands, just things that have cropped up, I returned my I returned these movies. I mentioned that I rented some stuff over the weekend at Movie Madness. And I haven't done that in a long time. And one of the reasons why I don't rent DVDs much anymore is because I always keep them way too late. And then it's like you're just having to give them one of your kidneys when you take it back because of the late fees. And I realized to my shock and horror and shame and amazement yesterday that I had returned two of them, but a third one was still in my glove box. So it's like I don't even want to know how long the meter's been running on that. And if it becomes like some sort of if it becomes like the IRS fine, you know, where it's like it becomes some sort of like compounded daily thing where now they own my house. So I had to...
I just want to say real quick, I had a thing just recently where I had a book that was due at the library and I couldn't find it. And it was way overdue. And then And then it finally, I just had to return it because I couldn't keep extending it anymore because somebody else wanted it. And I had to go, and I tried to pull the whole thing. I swear to God, I returned it because honestly, I really did think I had. And they were like, no, you didn't. It's lost. You have to pay us for it. And I was like, damn
it. How much did you have to pay?
Well, it was like $18 plus whatever like the late fees were.
Right.
So like I owed the library like $23, so I couldn't check anything out. And so then when we were getting ready for my birthday party and we were cleaning the house, Patrick pulled it out of something, goes, oh my God, look, it's the book. Great. And so, but then I was like too humiliated because I had done that whole blustery, I returned this.
Sir, I resent the implication.
You people don't know what you're talking. You lost it. You're pinning it on
do
me.
Do I look like a thief?
So I made my husband do it. I made Patrick. I gave him my library card and I said, go take this in and tell them we found it and pay my fines for me.
Well done.
Because I'm embarrassed. And he's like, all right.
Remind me when we're done here, because this sounds like the very soul of entertainment, to tell you another late fee story here in just a few. Hold on a second. I'm going to make a little note to myself. Anyway, yesterday was Lara's last day before she leaves. And it's like, I'm sure you can buy stuff in Istanbul. They have stores, I'm told. But you don't want to be just some American wandering around, you know, going, you know, where can I find some aspirin, you know, or whatever. And so she's trying to get everything she possibly can, purchased yesterday. And I swear to Christ, so as I'm standing at the office depot and I'm looking for something, she's on the phone next to me and we're multitasking because, we now are officially that couple where one of us is doing something and the other one's on a cell phone trying to figure out, like, the next stage of the day's shopping. So I'm there and I'm looking at, whatever, Seagate drives or something. And Lara's on a phone with I'm presuming, like, REI or, one of those, like, outdoorsy stores, because her whole thing is that everything gets... She's basically carrying... She's taking as much sort of camping gear as possible because she's just got one backpack. That's her whole trip is out of one backpack. And so the thing is you try to get stuff that is as small and light as possible so that you can just got it all with you. And so as I'm looking at these drives, she's on the phone and she said, hello, sir? Hey, I'm looking for this thing. I'm looking for this thing that lets women pee standing up. Hello? No, really. I'm not screwing with you. And it's like, and I just sort of looked over and I arched an eyebrow at her and she kind of waved her hand at me like, don't ask. Except then,
I know what she's talking about.
See,
though.
Okay, but see, if only I'd thought to say, who would know about peeing standing up, sweetie? You should call Dawn because Dawn knows all about whizzing while standing. She called. Three different stores, and these are outdoorsy kind of places. You figured that they would understand all of the various ways to pee in the great outdoors. They had no. She called three stores in a row, had no idea what she was talking about. Hmm. And in fact, I didn't hear it, but apparently the reaction at the end of the phone every single time was like laughter, or maybe they thought they were being punked in some way, because she had to clarify with every one of them like she wasn't making it up, that it was a real item. So what is the? I never did find out what it was because she gave up. What is, to whatever degree you want to describe this, is like a funnel with a tube?
Yeah, it's basically like a funnel that is shaped as such so that you can kind of, it will sort of
gather.
It will fit somewhat in the woman's crotchal area. And then, it's kind of a curved funnel so that you could pee in a standing up. Because honestly, if you're female, peeing, like standing up and in the outdoors and stuff, It's a damn nightmare.
Yeah. Well,
it's just horrible.
And I think that's their whole thing is, it's not like Turkey is just some sort of, some sort of nation filled with savagery. I mean, I'm sure they have toilets. But it's that where you travel, you just never know.
Well, and in a lot of countries, you really don't want to be sitting down in their public facilities.
That was her whole thing. When I asked her, I said, don't they have, like, bathrooms in other, I mean, I know you're going to be on the continent, but it's like they have plumbing. They existed before America did. And she actually said, think about in this first world nation, what kind of filthy toilets you sometimes run into, like just when at like a rest stop. She's like, and that is an actual thing that is supposed to be maintained.
That's in America.
Yeah. Well, she said, and it's like, that's not even like in some small village somewhere or whatever. She's like, here where we believe ourselves to be on the very cutting edge of technology. And plus, let's be honest. When I say that's in America, like, we're germ phobes in this country, like nobody else. I mean, the rest of the world, I think, just sort of accepts the fact that, like, you can only keep nature away from you just to a certain degree. But here, we're just so obsessive compulsive about just keeping everything, like, spick and span. And yet we've got toilets that are basically just like big dumpsters. And so she said, so imagine what it's like in some country where they're not obsessed with scrubbing things constantly.
Yeah.
So I don't think she was ever able to find it. If only I'd called you, I could have just suggested that we stop by the hardware store.
And made one for her.
And just made a pee trough for her that she could carry around in her backpack.
Yeah, I have no idea where you would actually buy one. I think she was right in calling like REI and those places, but apparently they had no idea what it is. It is something you can find on the internet.
You got to find a picture of it so we can put it up at...
Well, I believe a listener has sent me a link.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what they do. All right. It is the... Anyway, so I went to bed, yelling at midnight. I got up at 3, so here I am. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's... Okay, now that doesn't look at all...
That's not... This is a different one than the one that I had seen before, but it's the same basic concept.
I think that's something you wear for a spy versus spy Halloween costume.
If you put it on your head, but if you put it between your legs, it'll help you be standing up.
Okay, but seriously, I don't mean to be difficult here. I have no idea what you would do with that or how it works. That doesn't look at all like the thing I was picturing.
Okay.
All right, well, in any event, how was your evening, Don Taylor? Was it filled with urine-based fun?
Oh, it was fun. By the way, Cheryl wants you to check your damn Skype.
All right.
That was, the damn was her words,
okay,
not mine.
Got it.
I had this dream last night, and I entirely blame you for this, but because you were going to, because you'll figure out why I blame you for this, but I had this sort of nightmarish dream in which I had to go pick somebody up at the airport. And I often have these weird airport dreams where I have to get to the airport, but in my dreams I have to take some sort of insane dream logic public transportation.
Right.
Where I have to, like, wait at some kind of a stop and get on a light rail train and get to an airport and then walk through miles and miles and miles of corridors. So I was doing that, and then I couldn't figure out where I was supposed to go, so I was trying to call my friend who I was supposed to pick up to say I was running late and I didn't know where I was, and my phone wouldn't work. In my dream, I had this like older like flip phone, and whenever I would flip it open, it would just stop working, and I kept having to jiggle it and put the two flippy parts back together to try and make it work, and then I'd get it to work for a second, but it wouldn't work, and then it wasn't. And then in the dream, I realized at some point, damn, well, my phone is broken. Now I have like a logical justification for spending money and getting the iPhone. Because my phone is broken. And so in the dream, I'm thinking, Patrick's not going to go for it. He's going to be annoyed. I want to spend like $300 on a phone. But too bad I have to because my phone's broken. So then I woke up and realized it was a dream. And I swear to God, about 10 minutes later, I thought, you know, it might work. I could just break my phone. And I realized that wouldn't work, that he'd just be annoyed at me for breaking my phone. He wouldn't go, well, Don, you still don't have the $300 to buy the phone right now.
His solution would just be to go back to the store to buy another $12 phone.
Right.
Right. Or just to go without. Well, yeah. Don, I guess you'll just have to use the landline for everything.
But it worked so well in my dream
that
I had like a couple of minutes pre-coffee where I thought, you know...
Can I just tell you this? Can I just make this observation? I've said before that when I got my MacBook in December of 2008, that it's like the trash, you know, the box that it came in was so beautiful that it actually pained me to throw the wrappings out, that I wanted to leave them there for, you know, so when Laura got home from, she was in Utah, I think, at the time, so that I could actually say, look at this trash. Isn't it beautiful? I've actually not thrown out that little box that the iPhone came in, the box that you were looking at. It looks like a box you get business cards in, sort of.
Or like it looks like a box you would get a really expensive bottle of perfume in.
Yeah, or
it's a really well constructed box.
That's right, Don. That's, you know, and that's just the box the phone came in.
I know.
That's not even, the box doesn't do anything but hold the magical iPhone.
See, you're making me sigh again.
I can say this now because she's no longer in the country. She probably is in like Tehran or wherever the hell she's going first by now. I can say this. I don't mean to pile on, and I'm not trying to start another fight about this with anybody. But, you know, last night, she wanted to be able to, you know, she doesn't have phone service when she's in Asia or wherever. But she's taking her phone with her to use as a camera. And then she wanted to figure out how to then, like, hook her phone up to, you know, a computer and, you know, to offload the, you know, if she wanted to mail those or whatever. And I have to tell you that Android, I mean, and I'm a pretty sharp guy in terms of, you know, how technology works. It took me really just a massive amount of time to figure out how to operate things on that phone. Whereas, you know, my iPhone, I'm sure there's an instruction book somewhere. I've never needed one. It just it's basically I just have to look at the phone and just think things, and it responds, Don, like a well-trained pet.
Sometimes it just takes a picture of your junk when you haven't even asked it to.
No, but see, maybe I was, though. Maybe it was a thing I was afraid to voice out loud. Maybe it was an app that actually reads my innermost primal desires. Sort of a Tommyknockers-style phone. All right. Well, let's do this. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, by the way, brought to you by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. The Cleaning Solution is a business that will come to your home or a place of business, come to your residence or to your office, and clean anything your feet might touch. We'll talk a bit more about that later on, 971-533-3211. Please give all of your attention, every single drop of it, to Dawn Taylor. She's at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The toxic sludge that is slowly creeping over parts of Hungary has reached the Danube River. Hungary's Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, says he's not sure how bad things are.
Let's see.
Sludge.
Sludge. Let's see if I can find the sludge cut here. Hold on. So now I brought up the Skype messages. Madame Skype messages. And now my damn Skype messages have... Does this mean anything to you? It says, today is the day that Rick Emerson begins his journey down the evolution scale. Oh, is that a reference to my wife being gone?
Yes.
That must be what that is.
Yes.
Okay. I was trying to figure out exactly what that was all about. Sludge 1.
The pollution is the most serious thing after the losing of human life, because we don't know exactly what the size is. Not physically, but, you know, in terms of depth.
What country is this again?
Hungary.
The pollution is the most serious thing after the losing of human life, because we don't know exactly.
Like a confluence of many different accents.
Not physically, but, you know, in terms of depth and the seriousness of that of the special material.
I like that accent.
Yeah, but it also sounds like he doesn't quite know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I guess they have flax in Hungary, too.
Sounds like he's talking about something dirty.
Like he's the Tad Allen of Hungary. He's just been shoved in front of a lectern somewhere, and they go, just make it better. You, the make PR problem go away, or
well,
we will kill whole family.
He is the prime minister.
I would imagine that this is the same there as it is here, where he may be the prime minister, but there is some guy at an oil company or a refinery, or in this case, an aluminium plant, that's just decided that that he's the guy who's taking the fall for this entire thing.
I think it's a serious ecological catastrophe, but we don't know what the size of it. But it's serious, big, and because of the rivers, you know, it has some effect. Tens of kilometers from here as well.
Sorry. I have no idea what the hell he was saying. None. Zero. All I heard was kilometers. That was it. And I think that's only because of Hunt for Red October. So I got, I have nothing. Did you see that story that came out yesterday that the independent commission that was appointed to investigate the BP oil spill, the independent commission, their presumably objective, unbiased result was that the Obama administration blocked them at every turn and blocked scientists from actually telling people how bad the oil spill was.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. So to everyone's shock and amazement, apparently the Obama administration lied to you. I don't want to, like, rattle anybody too badly by saying that. But all right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. This is Dawn Taylor.
Republican candidate for Oregon Governor Chris Dudley donated his house to the Lake Oswego Fire Department in June of 2004. The department spent 3 days training in and then burning down the house. Dudley got a note from the fire chief and a $350,000 tax deduction. Willamette Week magazine's Nigel Jacquez first reported the story this Wednesday. Jacquez estimated the deduction saved Dudley $140,000 in taxes. Dudley's campaign director defended the deduction in a written statement. He's allowed under the law to take a deduction, and he did everything by the books. Chris Dudley provided a qualified appraisal of the property, wrote his campaign director, Josh Gisberg. His property met the safety and environmental standards for qualification, and Chris paid for the removal of the debris following the training. Documents provided by the campaign show the appraisal was finalized in December of 2004, nearly 7 months after the actual training fire. His home sat on 1.6 acres across from Oswego Lake Country Club with a view of the golf course. The appraisal shows the home was 55 years old with 4 bedrooms, 4 baths, and 4,927 feet of living space. The appraisal states the estimated value of the land was $850,000 and the estimated value of the home was $350,000. So he got a $350,000 tax deduction for letting Like Us We Go burn his house down.
Well, I'm sure there was nothing untoward happening there, and I'm sure that that's the same deduction that anybody else could have gotten, Don.
Right.
All right. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Let's do one more here. We'll take a break, and on the other side, we'll talk to author Bill Carter.
A Zimbabwean man has accused a gang of three women of kidnapping, drugging, and raping him in the fifth sexual attack targeting male victims in under a year. A police spokesman said the 26-year-old was suffering a lift in the... was offered a lift in the southern city of Bulawayo, but passed out in the vehicle after he was grabbed from behind and his face covered with a cloth. He said he fell unconscious again after being given a substance that tasted like alcohol. After he woke up, he was naked, and the ladies took turns to rape him and abused him.
Now, when you say raping, are you talking about the front side or the backside raping?
I don't
know. Or maybe like a mouth raping of some kind.
They don't actually make it clear in this story.
Okay, but see, how can you not make it? That's the thing that everybody who's hearing this story, male, female, gay, straight, Jew or Gentile, we all want to know which area of his body was assaulted, if it was.
I'd say that it was after he woke up. I don't know.
Well, you were saying then because presumably if he was unconscious, he would not have been able to achieve a state of tumescence. And so
right.
But I don't know that that's true. You know, as any man will tell you, that is not the case. In fact, scientifically speaking, you know, while a man sleeps at night, Don, many times that area of the body, you know.
Yeah. And fear will often have that
salute
effect.
And retract. Yes. Know. Yes. So.
Well, they're saying that it could have been one or more gangs involved doing this. This is the fifth such attack in several parts of the country. And in the previous cases, one happened when three women kidnapped an 18-year-old man. In another, four women forced a 25-year-old to have sex with them at gunpoint. And last month, a 44-year-old man was ordered to wear a condom and then was targeted by two women while a man stood guard.
See, but there's so much here that I don't even understand. Because that's, like, if you putting on a condom implies then a state of turgidity.
Exactly.
And it seems like, I mean, while fear can, you know, in some cases you result in that state of arousal, it seems like that is after the fact. It seems like maybe during... Look, I mean, guys get distracted by the wind or something, you know. And they, you know, you hear this, guys calling Loveline, and they go like, I don't know. And then the dog was barking in the other room, and I wasn't really able to focus on it. And this is going to happen every time the dog barks, you know. So the idea of then like you have a machine gun or something pointed at you, it puzzles my tiny brain.
And yet it seems to have happened. And interestingly, under Zimbabwean law, the charge of rape applies only to female victims. So.
Interesting. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. On the other side of this, we will talk to author Bill Carter. Also, listener Jenny going to be in the studio later on to count on the top five Pearl Jam songs, the dislike of which would make you a colossal dick. Also, Penis Watch on the way and Democracy on the March. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You stay right there. We are back after this.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. The shit has hit the fan.
Is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Here in just a few moments, we'll talk to Mr. Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and Red Summer, as well as the man behind the film Miss Sarajevo. He's going to be talking about Miss Sarajevo and Fools Rush In at PSU at 2 p.m. On Friday. That is tomorrow. It's tomorrow, the 8th. And he's going to be speaking at Wordstock as well, which is Saturday the 9th. So you can find out more about that by going to the Wordstock website or going to psu.edu. Also coming up this hour, listener Jenny will be in the studio to count down her top five Pearl Jam songs, the dislike of which would make you a dick. Correct?
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. We're here alongside Don Taylor, who's tracking the following stories for you on this Thursday.
A hotel guest claims a male employee wore her underwear. A high bidder on eBay won't pay for a chicken painting. And Vargas Llosa won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Excellent. That is all coming up, as well as another installment of Democracy on the March. And I'm looking at the phone here. I do believe this is probably Bill Carter. Oh, right there. And I answered it, and then it was gone. Gone!
What did you do?
I held it in my hand for just a moment, and then, like so much dust in the wind, it was blown away and scattered asunder.
And now he's just gone.
Sometimes
forever.
Even I don't really understand what the hell I'm talking about. Yeah, I'll have to hold on. Let me see if I can. No. All right. Well, in any event, I'm unsure about whether that was actually Bill Carter or not. So it looked like it may have been somebody. Looked like it may have been somebody who was attempting to call someone else altogether. Because I picked it up and they immediately disconnected it. So, well, let's do this. Let's pay a visit to the news desk, and we will be speaking to Bill Carter in just a moment here, as soon as he joins us. This, however, is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Dayanara Fernandez of Los Angeles says that when she walked into her room at the Hyatt Hotel in Deerfield, Illinois this summer, she was alarmed to discover a strange man wearing some of her clothes, according to a complaint filed with the Deerfield police. Specifically, the man had on one of her skirts and a pair of her high-heeled shoes, along with a Hyatt employee shirt. He closed the bathroom door entirely, and Fernandez noticed the man was also wearing her underwear. After changing his clothes, the man handed her various items of clothing, including her shirt, and that was
all right. We should probably actually,
thing.
Yeah, we should take a. that was when I was waving my hand at you just now. That was me saying we need to bring the story to a conclusion. Bill Carter's on the phone.
I was trying. I was right there.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday. Our guest today first entered the cultural mainstream upon the release of Miss Sarajevo, a documentary chronicling his time in that city. He's also the author of Red Summer and Fools Rush In. He's going to be talking about Miss Sarajevo and Fools Rush In at PSU 2 p.m. Friday tomorrow, and we'll also be speaking at Wordstock this Saturday, which is the 9th. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Mr. Bill Carter. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I am doing fantastic. Was that you calling a moment ago? And I believe I may have inadvertently disconnected you.
I think that was it, yeah.
All right. Well, try not to take any personal offense at that. Let's just blame that on my fat sausage-like fingers, and we'll just call it even and move forward. You are going to be talking about Fools Rush In and Miss Sarajevo, and I have to ask you, we've talked before about it. You went on sort of a journey of self, ended up in Sarajevo in the early 90s, and you document that time in the book and the film. When you are watching the news now, or when you hear about events in that part of the world, even though things have stabilized to some degree there, is it difficult to be in a place like that and then not to sort of dwell on or obsess on what's happening to everybody that you met there that you left behind?
When you leave there at the time, of course, it's a real problem. If the conflict wasn't over, I had a real problem. today when I watched the news, which, you know, there's a lot of news right now about the elections that happened this week, with the three states. And that's all troubling because it has a real ring of what it was like there in 1990 prior to the war, real nationalistic Serbian banter is going on. I think the good news is that the Bosnians and the Croats both elected moderates. And I think, so there's a little bit of hope, I think, but that part of the world tends to ratchet things up to a point that it's hard to turn back.
Do you keep in contact with, you know, with a great number of the people that you met while you were in Sarajevo? Is that, I mean, are those relationships that are, you know, they're difficult to maintain, you know, with so much distance and time?
Oh yeah, no, I'm in touch with a lot of them. Some more than others, but it's over the years we've kept in touch, and it's one of those situations where if I go to Sarajevo or if I am about to go, then I can, you know, I kind of reach out to a whole bunch of people, and then when I arrive, it's kind of, you know, the bonds that are created in those kind of situations in war don't really go away. Whether they're good or bad, they don't go away. So when I arrive, it's like an old friendship that, you know, we all have these friends in our life that you might not talk to them for 5 years, but the moment you see that particular friend, there's a richness to it that you don't have maybe the people you see every single day of your life at work.
It's one of those things when you read Fools Rush In, now in 2010, when people read this book, and I was talking to my wife about this, that it really was a different time in the sense that we weren't all so interconnected by this huge web of technology, and that you jumped through, and we talked about this the last time you were on the show, that you jumped through all of these hoops, and even that really undersells what you had to do to try to get the word of what was happening there out to the rest of the world, and you can drive this whole series of steps that put you in touch with Bono and the rest of U2, and eventually a lot of the people of Sarajevo were able to speak to the world via the Zoo TV tour. When you talk to audiences now, is it difficult to convey how difficult it was in the early 90s if you were in some remote part of the world to make contact with people on the outside?
Yeah, it's a little tough when you're talking to, you know, 20-year-olds at a university because their entire lives have been wired, and they don't, you know, their cell phone allows them access to the whole world. But, you know, what happens usually is I set it up in a way to try to tell them what was happening there and to tell them that how cut off it was and that access to the rest of the world took a satellite link up, which, of course, you couldn't get a satellite link up because it's, you know, $10,000 an hour or a minute. So it, at the time, it was, you know, if you wanted to talk to the outside world, your only hope was a guy with a suitcase, there was these guys, and you pop open the suitcase and a little umbrella would come out, like a pretty good-sized umbrella, and then he would have a satellite phone. And those guys were making money on people who wanted to call, and it usually was around $30 a minute to make a satellite phone call. But in terms of, like, what we see today, like YouTube or, you know, just whatever, sites that have instant footage, we didn't have anything like that. It's a little tough because kids don't get it, but I think, you know, if you set it up in a way that you tell them, you know, imagine your world when you wake up, you have no computer, no internet, no phone, and no car, and no gas, and no food, and your mom and dad are gone, so what are you going to do? You know, that's about the equivalency today.
We're talking to Bill Carter. He's going to be at a free screening of Miss Sarajevo at PSU 2 p.m. on Friday. It's going to be in the Multicultural Center at the Smith Memorial Student Union, and you're also going to be selling copies of Fools Rush In, and then you're going to be you're speaking on a panel at Wordstock, which is coming up Saturday, 5 p.m. in the Oregon Education Stage. What kind of panel are you going to be speaking on? What are you going to be talking about?
You know, to be honest with you, I don't think it's a panel. I don't think it's a panel. I'm kind of confused. I feel terrible about the information, but I think it's just me in a room. You know, it's you know, like your thing at PSU, you know, the great thing about this thing is that people of all ages, when they watch this movie for the first time, it's really interesting to watch them all emotionally react in similar ways, which it's a kind of a hard movie, but it's also incredibly uplifting in some ways that people are able to survive in anything. And so I think people come away, you know, very moved by it and have a lot of questions, not just about what happened, because that's what, you know, literally that already happened, but about how that translates into today's emotional and spiritual and physical world.
There's this sequence in Miss Sarajevo that was really these words kind of lose their meaning over time because they get so overused. But it was really gripping where you are showing this. It's sort of an alleyway or an open space between two buildings, and that people are having to move from one place to the other because they're having to get food or supplies or water or something, and they're having to navigate this. Basically like a shooting gallery between two buildings. And sometimes I think when people think about, you know, they hear about the war in Sarajevo or violence in places like this, that I think in America especially, we picture everything as being like a barren plain. We picture everything as being, you know, out in the jungle somewhere. And this is in a city. This is between two large buildings in a city where to get from one to the other, you're talking to these guys who are like, well, yeah, the key is to make the journey, you know, at night or under the cover of darkness or when nobody's going to be, nobody's going to be around, because otherwise you might just get shot on the way. And it really is. Were you even able to process that in the moment when you go back and you watch that footage? Do you realize that you were just, I mean, were you even aware of it at the time consciously, what kind of danger you were in?
I mean, I think the question goes to the subconscious, too. I mean, I was aware of where I was. However, if I was hyper-aware, then I wouldn't be there. So I was doing things at a very intense level, and that kind of kept me in the moment. I think that hesitant, I mean, when you're, I found this to be true. When people are hesitant in conflict or violence and in war, it often leads to their demise. It just, there's a weird thing about being hesitant that doesn't work. I don't know what it is, but it's just true. It's a little bit like first instinct, you know, go with it. In terms of what you're asking, listen, I was in Portland. I was lucky enough to be there on your show in June. Your downtown Portland is quite small, and it's not unlike Sarajevo's parts of Sarajevo. Just imagine that whole downtown completely gutted. Completely surrounded, like from the river. The river would be, and then maybe the mountains or whatever. If that was your area, and everything you have to do is in that area for 4 years, and if you go to the river, you'll be shot. If you know, all the buildings have been totally abandoned and totally vandalized. So, you know, you have to kind of make it in that little area, and people are shooting down all those alleys. It makes it for a very, like a rat-like existence that you have to find a way to do.
Do people lose their what's the word I'm looking for? Do people really lose their humanity in a situation like that? You know, you see sometimes, you know, in film depictions where people are living in wartime or in some sort of post-apocalyptic surroundings, and they just become very primal. They just become almost like animals who were shoved into a small space together. Was that what you saw in Sarajevo, or did they? The sort of essential, did their essential human nature remain?
No, it's interesting. I mean, you have both. I would say that, of course, you're going to have people that find a way to prey on the weak and, you know, war profiteers and things like that. That's part of war. But the thing that really, I would have never stayed in Sarajevo ever. It's what I found wasn't the opposite, which was people beyond just living, they were really thriving in a way that is very hard to find day to day in all of our lives. Whether it was art or friendship, you know, communion, whatever it was at a level that was shocking. It just absolutely shocking. And it's what made me want to stay because I had never experienced anything like that. It's a little bit, here's the only example I can give you in the United States. And you have to pick your disaster. But I was in the Northridge earthquake in L.A. shortly after one of the trips back from Sarajevo, unfortunately. And I woke up at 5 a.m. and, you know, the whole place was buried on top of me. And, you know, you go outside, and everybody in Los Angeles usually are too busy to talk to each other. You go outside, everybody's offering you water. There's no real reason I need water, but everybody's offering you something. Everybody's out in the street. Everybody wants to talk. Everybody wants to be together. Do you need help? Can I give you $20? That kind of feeling is what you do every single day in Sarajevo during that war. We only experience it usually in natural disasters. It's that instinct that we have to help each other. I think if you go to, I've been to Sarajevo now. It's different now. Now it's a little more like we are, a little more like fast-paced. Everybody's got their cell phone. Everybody's busy. You know, I don't have time. So, you know, it's not that they're superhuman, but those situations really forced the best of those, a lot of those people to the top.
Do you ever?
And, of course, you had the other people, too.
Do you ever feel like in some weird way that you find yourself wanting to put yourself back into a more dangerous situation because of the good things that come out of it? Do you ever feel like you are that you miss it because you miss the upside that comes along with it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't miss the war itself. I don't miss violence and people dying and tragedy. But the upside I miss. I've been to several war since. I've not really found it as much. Red Summer, the other book we discussed, a book written in June, was a bit of that. You know, the fishing in Bristol Bay, Alaska, also is a very intense place and very extreme, and it brings out both good and bad. And I find those things very attractive in life. And you know, you do find it in your everyday life. We all do. I mean, you know, we all have that in our lives, whether it's a neighbor, whether it's a boss, whatever it is, you know, it creates a scenario. We have to pick how we're going to react to it. And yes, I do like those things. But you know, I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 7-month-old. So it's just, you know, for me, it's an endless cycle of the ups and downs.
So really every day is just chaos personified for you. So Bill Carter's going to be at a free screening of Miss Sarajevo, Portland State, 2 p.m. Friday tomorrow. It's going to be in the Multicultural Center, the Smith Memorial Student Union, and selling copies of his memoir, Fools Rush In. And you're going to be speaking on a panel at Woodstock Saturday, 5 p.m. And it's all, your important appearance at PSU. I know there's a whole tour that's going on. You're going to be doing stuff at University of Washington, at Columbia, at Harvard. So, I mean, you are really... I mean, you're a guy, you basically just don't sleep, or you've cloned yourself in some way, you know, using technology the rest of us don't have access to. So, well done, my friend.
You got it.
Excellent. My best of continued success, my friend. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. We will talk to you again sometime in the future, I am sure. Bill Carter, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bill Carter. Seriously, have you seen Miss Sarajevo?
Yes.
It really is just the most astounding thing. I just remember watching it, and I'd read... I'd read sort of the overview of and sort of the synopsis, and then Lara, of course, had read, you know, she read Fools Rush In, and I opted not to mention the whole thing about how he's the inaugural member of the Authors I'd Like to F book club that my wife is starting, but she had put on Miss Sarajevo. And it was, I hadn't really been intending to watch it just because I was doing something else that night or whatever. And I just found myself walking through the living room to get something. And it was just astounding. I mean, it was just a staggering film.
Yeah, it really was.
So, anyway.
And he is just a mind-boggling human being.
Yeah,
just,
I mean.
I had nothing to say because I'm sitting here just staring at the microphone as if, like, it's him, like, in the microphone, just all starry-eyed, like, he's talking. I'm listening to him talk. I have, like, nothing to say.
And he's, like, the coolest guy. That's the other thing about it. He's the most down-to-earth. I mean, if I were that guy, I would just be the biggest dick on earth if I had done something like that. I would just be a bastard like nobody's business.
You just never stop bringing it up.
You know, I mean, you know what I did? I went to a war zone. You know, F you. What have you done?
I'd like a beer. You know why I'm so thirsty?
I mean...
Because I almost single-handedly brought peace to Sarajevo.
I mean, it's
me and Bono.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like what a dick I am now, and I've accomplished like basically nothing. Did I tell you? Was this on the air, off the air? That I the interview I did last week on Outlook Portland. I think it was last week. God, it all just blends together after a while. But it was. Lisa Shannon, and she wrote this book called A Thousand Sisters, and it's basically the same thing where she was at home, just, you know, and she has a film production studio here, or did, and she was at home one day just watching, like, it was like Oprah or something, and Oprah had this episode where she was talking about the violence against women in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is, according to Amnesty International, quote, the worst place on earth, and it was just that thing where she just had some weird switch flip her head, and she's like, I should go there and do whatever I can. I'm going to close my business and sell everything I own. And here I am on a plane to the Congo, the worst place on earth. And she talked about getting to her hotel, and she, it's like the whatever passes for a cab there, sort of, booted her out. And she was like going to the hotel. And as she walked, as she was walking down the hallway to get to her, like, you know, when I say hotel, I think I'm probably overstating it a bit. Yeah. But she was getting to her room. She just had to walk by a guy who was holding a 2.5-foot long machete and just staring at her. And he just seemed to be there for no readily apparent reason, you know. And she said, and then I turned on the news and there were just the reports of the cannibalism. And I was just, and you know, and it's like she's just, you know, not just, I mean, just like some blonde woman from Portland, you know, who just like had no special skills or training or whatever, you know. And it's like my biggest challenge is like, how can the camera at the CW make my nose look slightly smaller? That's my big worry. And my wife can't find this thing to pee in when she's standing. And this guy doesn't have my Seagate 500 gig drive. So, yeah. No, if I were Bill Carter, I would just call people at random in the phone book and just say, hey, I don't know who you are, but you're not me. I'm Bill Carter. And so, you know, and then just hang up. All right. I should point out, by the way, he's really not that way at all. It's so unbelievable how not that way he is. So if you get a chance to go see this, to see Miss Sarajevo Friday at PSU or to read Fool's Russian, you really ought to. It is quite something, as they say. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll take a little break here. On the other side, we'll come back with our good friend, listener Jenny. She's going to count down the top five Pearl Jam songs, the dislike of which would make you a colossal dick, not unlike I would be in the future or in some alternate reality in which I've accomplished great life-changing things. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show right here on the Emerson News Network. You stay right there.
You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
So don't tell my wife this, because I know you're going to be having a lot of phone conversations with her while she's, I don't know, wandering the streets of... Where's Morocco? Is Morocco a country? It's not a city, right? It's its own country. It's not like, what am I thinking? I'm thinking of Monaco.
Monaco is also a country.
I thought Monaco was a city.
It's a principality.
You don't know what that means.
It's a little island, and it's its own country.
What is a principality as opposed to a country?
That I'm really not sure.
All right. Well, in any event, so she's going to be in Morocco, wherever the hell that is. So probably nobody's going to be talking to her. If you do, don't pass this fact along. You know what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to have Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution come to my home and just clean, you know, the flooring, just front to back, top to bottom, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be, even if it's not filthy now, and it sort of is, it will almost certainly be not fit for human eyes, 5 weeks from now. Because I didn't even wait for her to be out of the country before I just started eating badly. I mean, I had effectively, like one of those frozen pizzas from Safeway that is, for all intents and purposes, just a piece of cardboard upon which a smattering of tomato sauce has been put. I mean, you know, that's what I had for dinner last night. I managed to not. Now what counts for a win is not burning myself on something that I've just cooked. So, after like 5.5 weeks of that, and I don't think I mentioned this on the air, but you actually said this thing the other day when I was talking about how, you know, I'm really lucky because I got a wife who likes to cook and she grows a lot of her own vegetables, and so there's always something great. And you looked at me with sort of this expression of genuine concern, and you just said, well, should I just start bringing some things in Tupperware, maybe, and just sort of putting them in the refrigerator here? It was like you were afraid that I was not going to eat at all in any way.
No, I'm sure you're going to eat. It's just she's going to be gone for, what, 5 weeks?
Yes, yes.
So it's like I have to look at you every day, and there'll be some point at which you'll just start getting puffy, and you'll just be cranky and angry because your blood sugar will all be out of whack, and you'll just be retaining water from all the sodium. It'll be unpleasant for me.
It'll be like that World of Warcraft episode of South Park, where the time lapse of me just bloating up, and my buttons are bursting off my clothing, and I'm covered in sores.
Huge pustules just start popping up on your face.
He's all distended. I don't know what's wrong with him. This was presumably a mention for the cleaning solution. Michael Beatty is the proprietor of the cleaning solution. You find out more about it, 971-533-3211 is how you can contact him. 971-533-3211. He will clean the carpet, the entryway, the linoleum, the caulking or mortar between the tiles, whatever it is you've got, especially hardwood, because you get like a stain on hardwood floor, and first of all, it's hideous, and then you're just going to have to replace it eventually if you don't get it taken care of, and that's just going to be expensive like nobody's business. So you don't want to have to, you know, to just take the whole thing out and replace it with something else. You want to get it cleaned. You want to keep it clean. You write this number down, whether it's for routine cleaning, maintenance, or whether you've got some sort of a spill, some sort of a stain you need to get taken care of. Mr. Michael Beatty can help you out with that. 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. Please tell me you heard about it here. Mr. Michael Beatty, owner of The Cleaning Solution.
Well, it was all that I could do to keep from crying. Sometimes it seems so useless to remain, but you don't have to call me darling, darling. You never call me by my name. You don't have to call me Waylon Jennings, and you don't have to call me Charlie Price, and you don't have to call me Merle Haggard anymore. Even though you're on my fighting side, and I'll hang around as long as you will let me, and I never minded standing in the rain. You don't have to call me darling, darling. You never even call me by my name. Well, I've heard my name a few times in your phone book.
Hello, hello.
And I've seen it all signs were played, but the only time I know I'll hear David Allen Coe is when Jesus has his final judgment day. So I'll hang around as long as you will. Never even call me by my name. Well, a friend of mine named Steve Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song. I wrote him back a letter, and I told him it was not the perfect country and western song because he hadn't said anything at all about mama or trains or trucks or present or getting drunk. Well, he sat down and wrote another verse to the song, and he sent it to me, and after reading it, I realized that my friend had written the perfect country and western song, and I felt obliged to include it on this album. The last verse goes like this here. Well, I was drunk the day my mom got out of prison, and I went to pick her up in the rain. But before I could get to the station in the pickup truck, she got run over by a damned old train. You will let me,
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we'll be joined by a good friend listener, Jenny Hieronymus, who is, by the way, who is a Mary Kay lady, woman, person. What do you say, Don? How do you?
I would probably say Mary Kay lady.
A Mary Kay lady. All right. So we'll have her join us here in just 1 second, and she'll be counting down the top five Pearl Jam songs, the dislike of which would make you a dick.
Maybe she'll give you a makeover.
See, I'm glad you said that, because now I don't have to. Now I don't have to suggest it. It's sort of to diminish my hideousness in some way.
We can find out what season you are.
The thing is, I think we. Now I'm almost certain that at one point we had somebody, a Mary Kay person. It was a guy too, because he was a male Mary Kay sales gent or whatever. And I think he came in and he gave Scotty a makeover, which, by the way, had like no demonstrable effect of any kind at all. So, which says more about Scotty than it does about the fine Mary Kay line of products. Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Thursday.
More women are making six-figure salaries, and a guy on eBay won't pay up for the chicken painting he bought. And, oh yeah, Vargas Llosa won the Nobel Prize.
Is this... Okay, first of all, I think it tells you everything you need to know about this program, that a guy who won't pay up for a chicken painting he purchased on eBay actually was more important to you than a person winning a Nobel Prize.
I know what the listeners want, Rick Emerson.
Now, is the eBay thing, is that an actual news story in the sense that it was like a headline somewhere, or is it just a happening? Is it just one of those things taking place somewhere in this big, crazy, mixed-up world of arts, and you've seized upon it as the thing you want to convey to the people?
I found it on one of my searches using my usual news sources.
So it actually has become a real news story?
Yes.
All right, well, we have to do it almost immediately, because I'm trying to know what's going on, but I'm not making that up. Let's welcome now.
We're also having some audio problems, so you might want to check our stuff. I don't know if I Cheryl.
Could you vague that up a little for me?
Cheryl said it's skipping, and another listener said that it's breaking up.
Hold on. Let's see if I can take care of that. And this might actually replay that. All right. Now, they're not going to hear the change for about 15 seconds.
Okay. So in about 15 seconds...
So there's if the skipping sort of noise persists, which is, I believe, a processing issue, they will probably hear that. All right, they will probably hear that.
They say it is better now.
All right, there you see. People say that Rick Emerson can't get anything done, can't accomplish things. That's right there, skipping. Now it's not skipping.
You fix that your own self.
That's
with
right.
Your own two hands.
I did
hands.
That. No, not even with two hands, not with two fingers of one hand that I solved that problem. That is the might, that is the power contained in my phalanges.
You're just showing off because Jenny's here.
It's true. And then somebody types in, this and a pee break, back to back. You are awesome. Well, that's true. All right, our good friend Jenny Hieronymus joining us here in the Rick Emerson Studios. Hello, how are you?
Hello, I'm good.
So you may know Jenny from such joints as the Sleep Country Bowling. The Sleep Country Bowling Extravaganza that happened earlier this year and also last year. You were the one who bowled. No, it wasn't a perfect game, but it was a big score, in 2009 for the Sleep Country thing, right? What did you bowl?
You know, I honestly don't remember. I have the score at home, but I know it was 7 strikes in a row.
But you were, blind drunk, basically.
Yeah, it was really weird, and I was really hungover from the night before as well. So I woke up. My husband and I had been at the beach with friends, and we woke up and drove home to do the pajama bowl. And I was really hungover, and I powered down a Viso and then kept on drinking, and I did 7 strikes. It was weird.
And this is when I was actually not there. I was in Vegas, right? Isn't that the thing where it was like everybody
We did it even though you weren't there.
It was like I actually couldn't be bothered. I was fine helping children sort of in theory, as long as it was a vague, figurative, like a metaphysical kind of helping. But, being there would have interfered with my... It's when I was seeing Britney Spears. I'm almost... That's got to be it. It had to have been when I was seeing Britney Spears and the Osmonds.
Well, as long as your priorities are in order.
Well,
look,
I mean, children who need help are going to be here day in and day out, 365 days a year. It was one day that year when the Osmonds and Britney Spears were both in Vegas. And so, one really has to prioritize in terms of availability. So I got this phone call while I was walking, and it was just after I had purchased Sarah's electronic cigarette from the street, the kiosk, you know, on Fremont Street or whatever. And I got this phone call, and I think it was actually Sarah maybe calling me from
it
there.
It was. Yeah, I remember.
Jenny's drunk, and she's bowling. Almost a perfect game. It's awesome. And so, anyway.
Yeah, it was really, you know, I have to tell you, that was like the first time I ever think I, like, put myself out there to any of, like, the Rick Emerson community.
Well, they're a fine group of people.
I know. You're welcome.
you actually went so far as you. This is the thing that actually, as much as I always, you know, I talk about how it's the best audience ever, you know, and whatnot. The thing earlier this year when the Sleep Country bowling thing happened, and I was in fact essentially unemployed, like for about 90% of my waking hours, you know, during the week, and you guys actually just created like a Rick Emerson Sleep Country team. Like, even though there was no show to which you attached it, and then we sort of absorbed it into the Outlook Portland thing.
But and you brought them some things, and they wore masks of Rick Emerson, so they could all look like Rick Emerson.
It was great and disturbing all at once.
And they beat the pants off a bunch of actual radio stations. As far as the competition goes.
And I know that it does assist those who are less fortunate. But that's actually not so important to me as it is to crush my rivals.
But then this year you'll remember. I think I bowled like a 100.
Were you drunk?
I mean, yeah, but I think everything I did perfect last year was just complete and utter failure this year. It was horrible.
Well, maybe it's not being sober. Maybe it's not being drunk. Maybe it's sort of maybe it's being drunk just the right amount.
That's right. Well, and you were there this year, and so maybe that was it. Maybe you jinxed us.
So we're going to be doing the...
and your husband bought the largest plate of nachos I have ever seen in my life.
Wasn't that unbelievable? That's Adam.
So this was at Big Al's in Vancouver. And Dawn, you had the greatest. This is actually before we'd actually even announced that this version of the show was going on. But this, I knew, we've talked about this a lot, how I had sort of passively indicated to Dawn that I was going to be doing the show. And I don't think I ever actually asked you, like, would you like to be involved? I think I sort of.
Yeah, I had to finally ask you a couple of months into the planning process, like, I'm going to actually be on this show, right? That. We've been talking about.
I'd sort of chewed around the edges of it, but I hadn't actually asked you. But I knew that I had made exactly the right choice when they brought this huge plate of nachos over to Jenny and Adam, her husband, at Big Al's. And Dawn looked at it, and Dawn said, because the thing about the nachos is I don't want to get sidetracked on this, but sometimes with nachos, there's all kinds of different ways to prepare them, and you would think it's a simple dish, and so it's easy to make it, to make it good. But it's not. Like, there's so many ways that nachos can be made poorly. First of all, are we all in agreement that salsa should never be served on the nachos themselves? It should be in a side dish.
Yeah, because it makes the chips soggy.
That's the thing. It makes the chips soggy, and then also your distribution is all unequal. And, the guy in the kitchen either thinks you want way more than you do or way less than you do. But they had sort of segmented the nachos out to where half of it had, like, chicken and half of it had, like, shredded beef or something. But then there was, like, a third of it hidden inside that had pork or something. And so Dawn looked, and your assessment was, you said it was like a strip mall made out of nachos.
I don't even remember saying.
Yeah,
that.
You said it's like if the nachos were a strip mall. That's what this is. And I just made a little I made a little mental note to myself, and I nodded and I said, "Well chosen, Emerson. Well chosen."
One thing I do want to say about that though is even though we the guys that, Tom and Scott and oh my gosh,
the other guy.
Tom and Scott and oh, my God. Okay, forgive me. Anyway.
Are you drunk now?
No, I wish I was, though. But that's when my memory cells really start firing. But if not for Scott finally saying, okay, I created the team this year, because we kept going back and forth, and him and Han on it, and finally he said, I've just created the team. Forget it. Sign up and pay your money. Because none of us were all like, oh, yeah, we want to do it. But then we all kind of sat and looked at each other, kind of virtually. And didn't really do anything.
It is sort of great that you guys also knew without even asking me, that just left to my own devices, I was going to sit on my big fat American ass and do nothing. That I would just be at home going, I know there's children who need help, but I'd have to get up and get dressed and put on pants and whatever. So we'll go to the news desk here in just a moment. We'll do the top five a few minutes after that. So these are the, just to give a little bit of a preview, though, so these are the top five Pearl Jam songs, the dislike of which would make you a dick.
Well, yeah, and I have something to say about that because, on Saturday I was kind of putting the list together, which was completely changed last night, but I was kind of messaging with Tom Sutton on Facebook, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to call this, and he came up with this. So I'm not saying that it's all his doing, but I am kind of implicating him.
Is there a reason? Is this because it's the 20th anniversary when they first performed, or?
Yeah, on the 22nd of October.
22nd of October. And you're pretty a pretty big Pearl Jam fan. You're not like in a microbus following them around, but I mean, you've done that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a long story, but you know, I don't know if you know this, but several years ago I had cancer. And then after I came out of the other side of that, I was just kind of like, well, don't you kind of have to do all the things you want to do? I mean, there's no time like the present, you know. So we just kind of said, hey, we really like this. And it's something my husband and I do together. And there's lots of other crazy fans that do it too. And
well, and then that thing where it's like they, you know, because like I've talked about this before that it's like I keep missing them when they come through the area. The only time I ever really got to see them do anything sort of live was when I was living in Spokane, and all of their shows are sort of different though. That's the thing. It's like there's no two.
That's the thing. I kind of joked about this, and it sounds really corny, but it's like every night is a gift. I mean, you just don't know what you're going to get.
And
that's so special because so many bands like have a set list. I mean, they're not worth seeing more than once or twice on a tour, because you're going to see the same thing.
Yeah, and it's the same stage wrap and the same introduction, the same, you know, the same whatever. And I think you and I have talked about this before, about seeing bands where it's like they just unspool.
Yeah.
I mean, so nobody's surprised. Like Manilow does this. Like, you see Barry Manilow, and he does, like, it's like word for word, like the same introduction of, you know, of the same songs that you saw him do last time. So we'll do this top five here in just a few at the news desk. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
The high bidder for a piece of art painted by a local chicken in Merrimack, New Hampshire, has refused to pay $550 for the painting, according to the seller.
Oh, because it's not a painting of a chicken, it's a painting by a chicken.
Yes.
Ah, all right then.
Wendy Thomas of Merrimack put the painting on eBay in mid-September and planned to donate the money to the New Kids Cove Rebuild Project to help rebuild a playground sponsored by the Merrimack North New Hampshire Rotary Club. But she said the high bidder, who claimed to be from Canada, created their eBay account in the last few days to fraudulently raise the bid for the art. Thomas said she contacted the bidder several times and filed a report with eBay, and she still has not received payment. Thomas said she dipped Simon the chicken's feet in paint and placed it on the canvas to create an 8.5 by 10 inch artwork called Feathered Fireworks. Bidding started at $9.99. Thomas said Simon's artistic career is not over. There's the painting. If you can see what it looks like.
Do you ever do this? Where you ever you're looking on eBay or you're looking on, you know, any sort of an auction site, and you have this morbid fear that you will somehow accidentally buy a thing that you are then obligated to purchase, and there's just going to be no way to undo it. I was looking for, I think when we were getting ready to launch the show, because we have these, we speak to you now through the Electro Voice RE20, which is the finest vocal transducer known to man. It's really an exceptional set of microphones. And actually, that microphone you're on, there's no slouch there either. I mean, these are you know, quality mics, but I mean, they're expensive. And so I was looking on eBay, trying to figure out exactly, you know, like what mics we were going to get and how much they were going to cost. We had, you know, cause it was something of a budget, but, you know, but I am like a colossal cheapskate, so I was looking and saying, well, maybe I can find something on eBay. And there's that thing where you sort, you know, by either lowest price to highest price or whatever. And so I was sorting highest to lowest, you know, thinking, because these are sort of pricey mics, and thinking that'd be the easiest way to find, like, this particular microphone. And the first mic they listed, it was like $17,000 or something. It was just like something unbelievable. Like, it was mind-bogglingly expensive. But we're recording, like, oh, well, I want to know what kind of microphone is $17,000. So I click on it to go look at the page. But then I was just gripped by this unholy fear that I would press the wrong thing. And then I would be a news story, one of those guys where it's like, and it would just, the news shot would just be me shrugging and going, I don't know, because like I accidentally hit the yes, I would like to irrevocably commit to purchasing this.
Fortunately, they make you go through like three or four steps to complete a purchase.
So they don't do like the Amazon, like the one click thing where you click, no, you know, and it's, you know. And
the thing about eBay is that I think the biggest scam that people pull on eBay that kind of cracks me up is that they know that there are a number of really stupid people who don't bother to look and see what the shipping is on things. So sometimes you'll be looking for something on eBay and the price will be just unbelievably good. And then you go, why is this price so low? And then you look at it and go, oh, yeah, They're charging $45 to ship it.
Is that now? If you're selling something on eBay, which I tried to do like once, and then it just seemed so unbelievably complicated that I gave up almost immediately. Laura and I had that, and I think this is a thing that a lot of people do, where when you are cleaning out your house or trying to live, you know, like a more Spartan existence, you'll have a bunch of crap. And you should get rid of it, but you don't. And and it used to be that, like, well, no, as soon as I throw it out, I'll need it, or I'll sell that at a garage sale. Now the thing is, no, I should keep that because then we can sell it on eBay or whatever, which never happens. It just sits there and it collects more dust. But we did try to sell something. It was years ago. It was like, I don't know. She had, for whatever reason, she had like a case of unopened like nail polish or something. And we thought we were going to sell it. But is that a thing where you can just like set your own, like your own shipping price? Can that just be kind of whatever
yes.
you want? Really?
Yeah. You can check. You can set a flat shipping price, or you can choose a calculator option where it will. You say, I want to ship it second day mail or whatever, and then you put in the package dimension and the weight, and it will actually calculate the cost by what zip code it is that you're shipping it to.
Because I know that even if I just buy stuff on Amazon or whatever, that's how they totally screw me, because I'll buy something. And of course, if it's something here, this is the worst. The worst is when you are shopping for something and it's something that by all rights, it should be available like in your town at a store. And you can't find it. So it's like you'll go to like BestBuy.com or something. And you'd be like, is this item available? I'll say, well, no, it's not. But we can sell, you can purchase it from our online store. And you were already sort of in the mode of wanting to buy the thing. And so that is when you are at your weakest, because they'll offer you the overnight delivery or something for the low cost of $94. And it just, And you realize it's too much, but you were coming from the place of wanting the thing that day. And so that's when you were most likely to accept those shipping charges.
Amazon Prime, my friend. Amazon Prime.
Which is?
You pay for it once a year. It's $70, and you get second two-day shipping.
Really?
You don't have to pay for shipping again for the whole rest of the year.
Is that on an unlimited number of items?
Yes.
I like what we're saying. See,
I was talking about like this. Where
is this
I was,
the thing where they send you a text message like when your stuff is about to arrive or whatever?
Well, that's a different service. But that's about that I just bought. I needed a new schedule book. $6.80 for this. But because I had the Amazon Prime, they sent it to me like two-day mail. So I got it second-day mail. And then I got the magical text messages telling me that the UPS guy was like on his way to my house. And I thought, it probably cost them $8 to ship this to me, and it only cost me $6 to buy.
So you win.
So I win.
So,
but over the course of a year, I think it really pays for itself.
Well, wait, so now I'm confused. You're paying the $70. Does that mean so then when you buy something on Amazon, your shipping is then the $70 notwithstanding, your shipping is free?
As long as it is from Amazon itself. Prime doesn't cover like the stuff where other companies sell through Amazon. So, but there's a little logo on each item where it'll say Prime, so you know if it qualifies for Amazon Prime. And particularly any book or CD or DVD or anything like that you get from Amazon is automatically going to be from Amazon. And most of what I buy from Amazon is books. So it's so that's good. And I, you know, I have to wait like an extra day. I don't get the instant gratification of like driving over to Borders and getting it right now. But at the same time, I don't have to go to Borders.
Do you find yourself
just comes to my house?
Do you get infuriated when there's a store that isn't open? When you decide, when you want whatever the thing is.
Yeah, because I usually want things at like 11 o'clock at night.
See, me too. And it's like I'm always here. I'll be here at like 1:30 in the morning and deciding that I need like a cable or like extra RAM for something or other. And stuff isn't open. And then I'm just filled with this like completely disproportionate but very American rage that I'm not able to acquire something that I can't consume and purchase like at any time, day or night.
Yeah, but the Prime thing comes really handy. Things like my mother-in-law didn't know what to get for a laptop and a printer, and she wanted me to, like, and I talked to her about laptop options, and so she wanted me to, like, just get it for her, and she gave me your credit card number to just buy it and get it for me. And so I actually bought her a laptop and a Wi-Fi, a wireless printer on Amazon, and yeah, and shipped it to my house. I didn't have to pay any extra for shipping because I got the Prime.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. We were talking about the chicken painting.
Ah, all right. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our Democracy on the March.
Here is your Democracy on the March for Thursday, October 7th, 2010, on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
America, yeah, coming again to save the mother day. Yeah, America, yeah, what you gonna do when we come for?
Here is Don Taylor with Democracy on the March for Thursday.
Virginia congressional candidate Crystal Ball went to a costume party when she was 22, dressed as a sexy Santa. Nine pictures of Crystal Ball, the Democratic candidate for Congress in Virginia's 1st District, have been leaked to the media by a right-wing blog.
Awesome.
Showing Ball dressed as a naughty Santa and posing with a fake penis attached to her ex-husband's nose. You will see two of these pictures, by the way, on Rick Emerson.
RickEmerson.com/pictures.
If you guys could pull that up, that'd be awesome.
Excellent. No, I'm going to do that right now, actually. All right, hold on a second.
I know it's all about me.
All right, I'll bring those up over here.
Ball alleges sexism on the part of her opponents. Oh, I don't want to go away from the Meebo.
No, I got it over here.
Of course, I'm embarrassed by these photos, she says. That was the whole point of these political operatives when they put them up. She said in a statement, but more than I'm just embarrassed, I'm angry. It's sexist and it's wrong, regardless of the political party. Ball's opponent, incumbent Representative Bob Whitman, denied being involved with the photo leak and released a statement saying he is opposed to the display. So it's kind of interesting because we have talked about this in the past that, you know, when Facebook launched, when people started using the MySpace and stuff like that, we started talking about, you know, the trend of people in their 20s putting embarrassing pictures of themselves on the internet and when we would start to see the fallout from that. Well, we now have 28-year-old Crystal Ball running for for Congress in Virginia.
Seriously, I can't overstate the degree to which everyone needs to go look at these photos. So, okay, let's back up for a second. What year were these taken?
These were taken 6 years ago.
Okay, so 2004. She's how old now?
She's 28 now.
So she's 22.
Yeah.
All right. So these were taken at a holiday party.
Right.
Why the penis on the nose?
He's Rudolph the red penis nosed reindeer.
And you may have said this, but I think the penis on the nose business might have actually it might have short circuited my brain for a second or two. Is this her husband or was this some?
This is her now ex husband.
Her now ex husband. Oh, I wonder who could have possibly leaked these photos to the internet. I will guarantee you this, like 98.9% of sex videos or revealing photos or whatever that are put on, on the net. I mean, they're put up by embittered ex-boyfriends or ex-husbands because you figure the guy, you know, basically has. I mean, it's just unless it's just some hideous warthog of a woman. The guy, what does he care? You know, he's like, hey, look at me. A woman voluntarily had sex with me and let me tape it. That's how awesome I am. Look at my penis.
I don't know if he is just completely hammered drunk or if he's deliberately. He thinks that being a reindeer means he has to play extra stupid.
He looks really dopey.
Yeah, maybe he's just not that bright.
She's making her sexy face.
Well, see, and I was
showing her belly.
I was gonna say I'm a fan. Did you say that she's a Republican?
No, she's Democrat.
Okay, so she's all right. Yeah. That's less interesting then.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this sort of thing is to be, you know, this sort of thing is I find extra hot if it's a Republican doing it because then it's the sort of hidden naughtiness.
Well, why did they say it's sexist? Why is it sexist? It's sex-y.
Yeah, there you go. I'm glad you know the distinction.
What's wrong with something being sexist?
It's not even really sexy, to be honest with you. It's kind of weird. But.
No, she is. He's not. You have to master the male trait. This is the thing that guys hone this skill from years of watching porn. You have to mentally remove the guy from whatever you're watching. It's like those post-Stalin propaganda films where they didn't want to pay to have the propaganda films remade, and so they did this. If you see any of the propaganda films that Mother Russia would show its people after Stalin, they did this hilarious Austin Powers thing where they would just take all the propaganda films that Stalin had made in which, like, he is the guy who does everything and he is the Superman who leads them out of a dark age into a glorious future. And every time Stalin appears, there literally is just like a potted plant or something that's been like pasted onto the film to cover him up. So that's sort of what your brain learns to do if you're a man. So you can, because otherwise, it used to be much more difficult if you were a guy. And this is yet another conversation that has brought us back to porn, which is like, that's what we talk about. We're not talking about Don's big bottle of Vicodin.
Or drugs.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, the kids today, with their just hot and cold running erotica online, they don't understand what it was like when everything had Ron Jeremy in it and there was just no avoiding him. And it was like, and he was just, you know, he's just like a hairy homunculus, and he's always with some like really hot girl. And so you then you just have this whole internal battle about whether you even want to watch it or not. So instead, you just learn as sort of a, you know, it's just a form of psychological repression, where it's like you look at Ron Jeremy, but you don't see Ron Jeremy. And that's what you do with this photograph here.
Well, I'll tell you, I have to take issue with her saying it's sexist, because honestly, if she was a male politician and she was sucking on a phallus-shaped reindeer nose at a Christmas party, I believe her opponents would probably leak that. His opponents would leak that as well.
Probably, yeah.
It's too awesome to not leak.
Seriously. Yeah. And what is? I'm trying to figure out what's up with her pants there. I can only see, like, the top of them. But they've got, is that like the top of her pants, or she got like, is that her underwear? I can't
not
quite.
Sure. But if you go to Gawker, you can find all, I think it's at Gawker, you can find all nine of the photographs.
Oh my, I love Gawker.
I wonder if she's anything like this when she's sober, or if this is the inner crystal ball that is coming out of these
photos.
Inner
Davis crystal ball.
Which is great. And the thing is, you know, she was what, 22 when these are taken, so that probably is her real name. So she clearly comes from a classy family where they instill just the deepest and most moral of virtues in her. All right. Awesome. You can see those at rickemerson.com/pictures. Those are the visual aids for October 7th, 2010. There's your Democracy on the March right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Hey, we're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. What's happening over there?
We have giggles over here.
We're talking about how...
special girl talk time. Yeah. Should I leave the room?
No, she basically put me in the position where I'm going to have to use profanity.
Oh, I
hope that's okay, Rick.
I
could start talking about sweaty balls or something.
You know, we had Peter Carlin on who kind of, well, you know, the first person to, it's not like there's going to be punishment of some kind for the profanity thing.
You're lucky.
I'm just kind of lame. And also, I think it's just like that I think at this point would be almost physically incapable of using profanity during the show, and so it's just easier just to proceed as it was. It's not like anything happens. Hell, Peter Carlin was here and he was talking about, you know, being at the sex club, and I mean immediately, you know, just it delved into filth like right out of the gate. So that's fine.
I was actually talking about this on Ham-Fisted Radio yesterday about how you know, it's like a huge lifestyle change for me to be doing this all day and. Being like just eliminating profanity from my life entirely. You can flip in and out of it because you've been doing it for so long. So like we go to a break or we go off the air and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, no hold. Suddenly you're like a sailor, I tell you. But me, it's like now I'm finding that I'm not swearing at all. So I go home and I'm doing that. I'll drop something on the floor and I'll go, oh, crap. That's as bad as it's gotten.
Oh, sugar.
I'm turning into fiddlesticks. I'm turning into that person.
Well, you know, I like to think that we're making you a better person one day at a time here. Well, that's when we talked to, we were getting ready to launch the show where we were announcing it on Court and Bobby's show. And I asked Court about that. I said, you know what, I said, you probably still have, you know, because he's a radio nerd for a long time. And I said, you probably have difficulty swearing. And he's just like, oh, F no. And he just immediately just unleashed a torrent of profanity. I mean, I guess, but like the proximity to Byron Beck, probably it just leeches into you after a while. But I had some point that I was making here, but it seems to be gone. Anyway, so yeah, so Peter Carlin, like, he vaulted right over that. And tomorrow is Friday, yes?
Yes.
All right. So probably tomorrow, actually, because it was Lennon's 70th birthday, and I have this comedy piece from National Lampoon that's about John Lennon that I want to play. But that is the thing where it would be completely pointless, you know, to play it if it were bleeped. So we're gonna roll that out tomorrow. So you know, even we ourselves will engage in crudity from
time
to time.
You're a rebel, Rick.
That's right. Living on the edge.
Well, I got Eric Snyder to tell me some of the more popular Mormon. Substitutions.
Did you say fetch?
Yes, I had never heard of fetch before.
Fetching.
I'm going to start using fetch.
Yeah,
the F word.
Here's. By the way, I'll just say, like, out of the gate here, this entire off-topic sort of monologue is brought to you by Castalia Language Center. They are based in downtown Portland. Clara Grebel is the woman who owns and operates Castalia Language Center, and you can find out more about them at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. Jenny, do you speak Spanish?
No.
Now, I know, here's the thing is, I know that that is not a totally original joke, because who was it that was going to do that last week and then screwed it?
Was that Anna Griffin?
Is this going to be Aaron, like the equivalent of hanging up on you, maybe?
No, it's good. I think it was Aaron Mesh, actually.
Oh, it might have been, yeah.
He was getting ready to do it, but then he stumbled on it. He said no, and then he said something in English afterwards. So well done. I'm glad somebody actually executed the joke properly. Well, in any event, if you are wanting to learn a second language or a third language, if you want to learn Spanish, and if you have either, it really doesn't matter whether you've had a single day of Spanish education in the past or whether you haven't, whether you are an advanced Spanish speaker or anything, any level of Spanish knowledge, they'll find a class that suits you in any day of the week, anything that works with your schedule. Because, you know, Jenny, as you might know, having children, of course, that diminishes the free time one has, doesn't it?
Amen.
Okay. I was trying to find a way to get into the whole scheduling thing, and I thought as a parent...
Well, right. Yes. I see. Okay, I'm with you now. I was somewhere else for a minute, but I'm back.
It was a flawless execution I did there.
Sorry.
It's not easy, Rick.
That's right.
The magic is hard.
In any event, the point is, if you find it difficult to fit things into your schedule, you can contact Castalia Language Center, PortlandSpanish.com, and they will find something that works with your schedule. And it's going to be in a class size of no more than 8 people, which means that you're going to spend more of your class time actually learning Spanish, and less time just sort of wondering when you're getting an answer to that question that you had like an hour ago. So you find out more at PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Greppel is the woman who runs that. She's a proud supporter of the Rick Emerson Show for reasons that has understanding from time to time, and of the Emerson News Network. PortlandSpanish.com is where you can find out more about that. Here's the observation I was going to make about Mormon profanity, though, is that so the woman that is actually traveling with Lara right now is this the girlfriend of hers from years back named Michelle, grew up down the street from her in this little town on the outskirts of Provo, and it's, you know, it is like a whole different world when you go, you know, when you're in that culture, or when you go to, you know, like when I have to go to, you know, Provo once a year or whatever, where it's strange. It's like you've been put into some weird network television world where no one swears at all, ever. And everyone is really, really white and really, really blonde and really, really scrubbed. And so her friend Michelle actually sent her an email about it. They were comparing their backpack weights or something, and they were trying to get their backpacks down to like 25 pounds or whatever. And the girl actually used, you know, Mormon profanity twice, where once she actually said effing backpack, and she actually spelled it like E-F-F-I-N-G, and then she said the fetching backpack, which is a thing that you hear constantly if you spend any time with Mormon folk.
Yeah, he said that they use flippin'.
Flippin', yes.
And fetching. And he said he actually heard someone referred to it one time as a flippin' fetcher.
Yeah, and I actually got it when I was first in Utah. There was this whole weird confluence of events when I moved to Salt Lake, where I was moving there to do a talk show. But the same week that I was moving there to do a talk show, they had flipped the classic rock station to be a country station. But they'd fired everybody immediately, because that's their biggest skill. So why not exercise it at every opportunity? So they fired all the DJs, but they hadn't none of their new air staff had arrived, and so there was this weird week where they just collared anybody they could in the building to go on to this country station, under some like alias, and just pretend to be like, you know. So there's this strange week where I was doing a talk show, but then for like 2 hours in the afternoon after that, I was being like a country DJ under some alternate name that they like paid us extra for a week. But at one point, I actually said it was either freaking or friggin' or something like that. And then I got a long, like, stern talking to from the general manager about it, because the deal was that, like, the sort of like fetching was their frigging, and that frigging was like their actual profanity, and it was like this whole weird like of adjusting the bar inside my head. So
wow, I would never last 5 minutes in
no,
that place.
It was the weirdest it was the weirdest time in my life. Really,
there's booze. Booze can be an issue.
That would be another thing.
Well, yeah. You can get it. It's just like you have to. The thing about living in Utah, as I understand, is especially if you're like a beer drinker. And did you bring beer with you? Is there?
Yeah.
I heard the clinking of bottles inside your bag.
My husband is a home brewer, and so I brought a couple bottles. I'm going to leave for Greg and Sarah, and then if Dawn would like one or two,
I don't turn down free booze.
No, no, of course.
It's the most delicious, I have to say. My husband, this beer, he really nailed it. It's an ESB, which I don't know what that means. He just said extra special beer. I know that's not what it is.
It's extra special bitter.
Bitter, yeah. But it's not bitter. It's just really delicious.
It's the nectar of the gods. It's
a
manna.
It really is. It is like the best beer next to his holiday homebrew.
Dom, would you like a beer as we prepare for the top five here?
And you know what? I bought a present for both of you.
It depends on how big the bottle is, because if I open like a large bottle of beer and I don't drink all of it, then can I?
But we could share it.
Okay.
I think you're the, you know, never, that's, yeah, there's no problem, but we can't find a solution for here.
Okay. And I'll use my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame bottle opener.
Let's do, yes, Don, what are you?
I was going to say you could chat amongst yourselves while I go get glasses.
Okay, sure. And Triscuit. Fantastic.
Well, I know your wife's awesome. Out of town, so I thought I'd bring you your first meal as a bachelor.
Seriously. This is, you know, I actually just sat this morning and over the sink and just ate, you know, since we got pizza last night. That was kind of our last, because she was getting ready to, you know, leave the country. And I thought, you know what, we'll do something easy. So I get this large pizza. And this morning, after I took her to the airport, I came back home and I just picked up the cardboard box and I moved it to the sink. And I just sort of had balanced the cardboard box on the sink and was just standing there like in my boxer shorts. I mean, it was really, and the
wow.
thing about, and the, like the layout of my house is such, I mean, I shouldn't even say this, but the layout of my house is such that if you are driving by, I mean, unless it's the middle of the day, if you are driving by my house, there is a straight shot from about five different places on the street where you can see directly into the kitchen. And I don't even know why they would design the house this way. It just seems it's like planned obsolescence. You can look through the front of my home directly into the kitchen. But the thing is, the kitchen is directly between that front window and the bathroom. So you have to, like, make sure the bathroom door is closed all the way, even if, you know, because sometimes maybe if you're the only person in the house, sometimes you become accustomed to maybe not always
like
shutting the
door.
For the
next 30
days. Yeah. I mean, just saying, you know what, it's like, if you ever live by yourself or whatever, it's like sometimes, you know, it's like you don't always close the bathroom door if you're alone in the house.
Do you have curtains?
No. No, no, no.
It's quite an invention.
No, no, because it's the kitchen window, and there are no curtains for the kitchen window.
Okay, I'm going to try and capture this. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead. It's the...
Oh, God.
That sounds beery.
Now, what is the alcohol content of this homemade beer?
I don't know. He tends to go for ones that are really high, because we don't like to waste a lot of time.
Well, no. No, I mean, really, what is... Because then you
I really don't know, but his holiday ale is the... Our friends request it every year now. I don't know this. He'd have to tell us.
The thing about it is, you're really right to just put as much alcohol into the beer as possible, because the thing about living in Salt Lake is that it's all like that 3-2 beer. And so as a result, people have to, you have to buy like three times as much as you normally would, I think. Because,
oh, and you know. I wanted to tell Don I bought you something.
So I just have to say, though, so this morning I brought Lara to the airport, and then it's like I came back home. And so there I'm standing in my boxer shorts, which I do believe were decorated with tiny alligators, in front of the kitchen sink with a pizza box balanced on the sink, just sort of like sadly shoving pieces of pizza into my mouth, and then you know, like in every third bite I would just reach into this open box of Quaker granola cereal and just sort of, you know, and just sort of do that as a chaser, realizing about halfway through this that anybody who was driving by my house could actually just sort of sit and watch me do the entire thing. So it's a little homemade fun for my neighbors for the next month.
That is a good beer.
I know. You know, I have to tell you, he used to like golf and have other things that he did.
Until he figured out he could make booze at home.
Yeah, and then when he started making beer, I was like, well, finally, here's a hobby I can get with. You know, because all, like, golf does nothing for me.
That's like,
you know.
Teenage boys have a lot of hobbies until they discover the erection. And then that becomes your hobby. That becomes your hobby, your career, your intellectual pursuit. It becomes all things.
Well,
what?
And I bought this for Don, so I wanted to give this to you. And you had mentioned you like these cat cookies from Trader Joe's.
I do.
Do you like the chocolate ones, though?
I do.
Are these cookies for cats or cookies in the shape of cats?
They're cookies in the shapes of cats. My best friend and I call these kitty crack cookies because they're low fat. So you never get that, like, satiety that makes you think, hey, I've eaten enough of these.
So you can eat the entire bin, basically.
You just keep eating them and eating them and eating them until some point you just start going, how many of these have I eaten?
And it was the best thing. We bought the ginger ones like this, and we took them. We just went to Yellowstone last month, and we took them, and I found out my daughter did not like them, and it was the most awesome discovery because I was like, well, now I don't have to worry about sharing these with her.
So it's a dessert you can have at home, and it won't vanish. It's a thing that you will have access to because she won't have eaten them all.
I know. I don't have to hide eat it or anything.
You know, they're very crunchy.
You know, here's the thing. You know, and so we're here with our good friend, listener Jenny Hieronymus, who is one of our many. Though we love the audience individually and as a collective amorphous whole, I would say that you are you're what we call a super fan and one of our favorite people. So
you guys are sweet.
It's really sort of you and Tom and Scott and a lot of our friend Kara and Seamus and a lot of those guys who are really just have really been sort of at the core of a lot of things we've done over the years, even during our many protracted periods of unemployment. You guys have sort of been out there and sort of keeping the flame alive.
Well, we have to have obsessions, I think.
But also, we can't have you guys in the studio too often if you're going to keep doing this, because we'll have our own gravitational pull at some point if you keep visiting us. Because here's the thing: this box of Triscuits is not even going to last the day.
Well, I saw some empties in the garbage out there. Was that you?
Maybe. I came here. It was on Friday or Saturday night. I actually came by to work on some of these processing issues we've been having, the clicking sound and whatever. And I knew that we had this is just the really what a colossal load of a human I am. I was coming here Saturday night to get some to work on the processing. I knew we had those Triscuits in the cupboard, but it was like how if I'm aware that I have cookies at home, I will actually make sure that I stop for like milk on the way. Or if I know I have milk at home, I'll make sure that there's something there to eat. I knew we had Triscuits here. So actually, before I actually came into work on Saturday night to sort of analyze all this stuff, I made sure to stop and buy like a huge tub of cream cheese. So if because what's the point of working if I can't do it while just using the Triscuits to ladle huge amounts of fat into my mouth? I mean,
I was listening to you guys talk about the whole spinach dip thing, I think that we fool ourselves into thinking that because it contains spinach that it's good for us.
That's like a salad.
Yeah.
I agree with you that I can only have so much of that stuff before I'm just like...
No, it turns on you quickly. It really does. All right. So shall we roll the top five?
Okay.
Dawn Taylor?
Let's do that.
All right. So these are the top five songs. And before we actually play them, I should say, so because we positioned these as the top five songs that you are more or less required to like if you are a Pearl Jam fan.
That's a better way to put it,
there can be
huh?
no argument about it. Not that I don't appreciate your colorful phrasing, but... and that is this in your assessment or is this in your objective opinion based on what the average Pearl Jam fan would say?
It's just me.
All right, so it's just you. So this is your unilateral.
But I have to tell you, how long ago did we talk about this? Like where I brought it up to you, it was like a month ago maybe. I think I've changed it like 400 times between now and then.
All
just
right.
because I love everything so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, you've changed. This is actually, now I'm looking at this now, this has changed from the last time
but,
you sent it to
you
me.
Will notice a couple that are still on there. Well, if you all have right. a memory
so
of that.
But. At any given time, there's any number of songs that if you don't like them, Jenny Hieronymus will just kick you in the junk.
Exactly. All right. Let's see. So,
can we mention the thing about the 20th anniversary?
Yes.
Yeah, on October 22nd is the 20th anniversary of Pearl Jam's first performance in Seattle. I just thought that was pretty magical and that we should celebrate that.
And so were they called Pearl Jam then, or was that when they were Mookie Blaylock?
That
still?
Was back then, yeah.
All right, and because that's why the album's called 10, right? Because it's his jersey number or whatever. So that's the only way that I ever learned. I have sports knowledge is if it's like via something else. So that's a friend of mine actually. It's one of those things. We've talked about this with like Star Wars figures and comics, where it's like you had the thing and then you lost track of the thing, and then you look back later and you can't believe you didn't keep the thing in a safety deposit box because it was so unbelievably valuable, which you never really think at the time. Like with that Creepshow comic I was talking about that goes for like $300 now. So you know what I had at one point is I had a. It's one of those things that they've created just so people, usually guys, will spend money on them with the picture disc. And the picture disc was, you kids, was a vinyl record that actually was not just the regular black vinyl. The vinyl was actually, it was colored vinyl and, in a picture of something, usually a picture of the artist or the album cover or whatever. And I had a picture disc of 10 that was actually, it was made to look like a basketball. And instead of saying like Wilson or whatever the name of the basketball is, it's just like Pearl Jam 10. On it.
And where is that now?
I have no idea. It's gone.
Where do you live again?
just
go in your basement?
Trust me. Here's the thing. I know it's not there because I've looked at it. Because every time I would see that thing for sale on eBay, for like X hundred dollars, I would just do like another big scouring of the basement to make sure that I didn't have it. And no, it's nowhere to be found. It's gone.
When I laughed because I'm one of the kind of fan-based Pearl Jam websites, they did this article. It's called, the website is 2feetthick.com. Anyway, they do a lot of Pearl Jam-based kind of articles, concert chronology. I can't say that word very well.
When it's like fans obsessing about the tiniest details.
Yeah, but they're
the band.
Really great. Yeah. I mean, they're really, really good about it. Anyway, they had a picture of the magazine in which of the band before Ed joined, mm-hmm. and it has like Robert Plant on the cover. And I looked at this and I went, I think I had this at one point. And then I was like, oh, are you kidding me? I don't have that anymore.
Yeah, no,
it would have been
not.
Really great.
No, because by definition, the things that are valuable are the things that people didn't keep. And so I would say that like Beanie Babies will be worth nothing because everybody is keeping them thinking they'll be worth something.
Oh, God, I hope my daughter's not listening.
No, it only becomes valuable because everybody's mom threw it out like the instant you moved off to college. All right, here is your top five for Thursday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right, ladies and gentlefolk, as put together by Jenny Hieronymus, super fan and massive Pearl Jam fan as well. Did you discover them with 10? Was that kind of where you...
Yeah, I actually lived in Arizona at the time, and I missed them at... I think they were at... They were out on the road with Red Hot Chili Peppers mm-hmm. or something, and I missed that, but caught them at Lollapalooza.
Was that the first... What Lollapalooza would then have been?
I think
what
it was
year?
The second.
It was, because the first one was... The first one was the one with Ministry and
Ice
Cube.
Oh, I saw
Cube.
That one, too. It was awesome.
Really?
Uh-huh.
See, I'm
we
jealous.
We can talk about that.
I could just sit and nerd about that stuff forever, because I was broke, and B, I had this whole... it doesn't really matter.
The I point still is, hold a grudge against Trent Reznor for the first Lollapalooza. Because I lived in Arizona at the time, and it was so hot that he couldn't perform because he's a delicate flower. And so he didn't perform, but then Susie and the Banshees did for, like, an extra long set. So hate him, love them.
Well, you know, and that was the one where it was like, it was, I think Jane's Addiction was playing, and it was Jane's Addiction and, I guess, Trent Reznor on some of the dates, and Ice Cube and Ministry, who were doing these weird back-to-back sets. And I've seen some footage of it. I wasn't there to see it. But that's, you know, but I never got to see Ministry.
I remember Ice Cube was awesome.
There's not a lot of...
I think it was Body Count, Ice Cube
that
and
was,
Body Count,
that
right?
was, well, Ice-T and
Ice
Body
Tea.
Count, I think
yeah,
were playing
right,
in
right,
that
right,
first
right,
Lollapalooza
right.
too. God, I suck. I mean, the more I talk about that, the more I realize, you know, that's, there were just these huge swaths of things that I didn't get a chance to, see. I've officially now become an old guy just bitching about stuff that I missed out on. All right, these are the top five Pearl Jam songs you are more or less legally required to love. Don Taylor?
The honorable mention is Man of the Hour.
Is this the correct song?
You're good.
Am I doing it right? Okay.
You're good.
I want to make sure that I'm playing the right one.
I just want to say that I would have put this probably higher in my list, but it's really sad. It's very sad. Do you remember this? It was at the end of Big Fish. It was like saddest thing. It's just, I don't know.
A movie I love, and I love this song.
I remember at the very end of this movie, I cried into my coat. And my friend looked at me like, I mean, like I shook the seat, kind of crying. She was like, what the hell?
Well, you know, Eddie Vedder's got one of those voices where it's, I don't know whether how to phrase it, but it's, he imparts this sort of, like a real weighty seriousness to anything that he is singing. And so stuff that maybe... And I'm not saying you would dislike it, but stuff that maybe you would be indifferent to emotionally. It's like he sings it, and immediately you just, He has a weird. There's a weird vibe to him that you know, a gravitas that is in all of his performances. Because I was thinking of the end of Dead Man Walking, which itself,
oh
like
my
the
God.
Movie, it's not like that movie's a real picnic either. But you get to the end where it's like Susan Sarandon and What's-His-Name are praying, you know, and then Eddie Vedder is singing that song that closes it out. And it's like if you weren't just reduced to emotional rubble beforehand, it's like, you know, that's just sort of the musical suplex that finishes you off.
Also, he's dreamy.
Yes.
I love Ed.
The train in the background adds
That's ambiance. And this is my funeral song.
Is that in your will or something?
No, doesn't everybody have one?
Yeah, but you got to make that sure that that's written down somewhere. Because otherwise, you're going to get a Celine Dion
my
thing played or something.
My husband knows. He'll still be here. I'm older than him.
These are the, that's the spirit. These are the top five Pearl Jam songs you are legally required to like, in the opinion of our good friend listener, Jenny Hieronymus. Don Taylor, what's number five?
Well, number five, Rick Emerson, is called I Got Shit.
Which technically, I had a discussion last night with one of my friends as to if this was truly a Pearl Jam song because it doesn't contain all the members of the band. It's Neil Young with Ed and I don't remember somebody else. Probably it's in my notes.
But I mean, it's, you know, you figure Neil Young is more or less like an honorary member of the band at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
Did he tour with them or am I just making that up in my head? They did some back to back, like on MTV,
yeah.
Some live stuff.
And,
I don't know if they ever toured together.
They were actually at Portland Meadows, I want to say, like in 93 with Blind Melon. Maybe it was 94.
Maybe. Because Neil Young went through this whole thing. I mean, even he as much as I'm not really a Neil Young fan, he's picked over the years a lot of really great opening acts. He toured maybe in 92 with Sonic Youth and Social Distortion as
cool.
His opening band, you know. And Neil Young's one of those guys that because he's had such an influence on guys like this, you know, that I keep wanting to like his music. You know, and it doesn't really ever come together for me. But, I mean, these guys clearly get something out of it that I'm not hearing.
When we go the end of this month to the Bridge School benefit, Neil Young is putting back together Buffalo Springfield.
Really?
So, I mean, that's just a little bit of history. You know what I mean?
Excellent.
I mean, I'm kind of indifferent as well, but, you know, you got to appreciate where everybody kind of comes from.
I also like the fact that he put out an album in like 93 called Arc that was just an hour and a half of feedback from one of his concerts where he'd like finish the last song and he set the guitar down on stage and it just sat and just fed back for an hour and a half, and then they put that out as a record. So that's there's a little panache there. What album is this
It was an EP
that
had this and another song on it, which escapes me.
Is this like one of those things they would send out every year to like the 10 Club or something?
No,
or is it just
this
like.
This was in addition to, they did a thing with Neil Young that was called Mirror Ball.
Right, right.
And then this was the EP that was with that. I think not, you know, kind of at the same time. The other side of the EP was Long Road. I had to think about that.
It took me a while, actually, to come back to embrace Pearl Jam as a fan because. You know, I was a DJ at a rock station around the time that Tan and Versus it came out, and it was just, and it was that, and it's like, and when Neil Young had just, somebody had decided they'd found the phrase "Godfather of Grunge," and so there was a 6-month period where it seemed like the only things we were allowed to play were Neil Young, Alice in Chains, and Pearl Jam, and it really just put a bad taste in my mouth for a while. But over time. I mean, I think everybody has sort of acknowledged at this point that while Nirvana got all the early fame, that really Pearl Jam is the standout band, I mean, from that whole movement. I mean, just to a massive degree. I mean,
I mean, their fans are really, I mean, we love them, you know? There's a lot of people that travel many miles from here to Europe. When they think they're going to tour.
And there is, you know, there is some sort of an intangible difference about them. You know, there's something you can't quite put into words. Because I have sort of mixed emotions about a lot of that music scene. But Pearl Jam just sort of kind of are on their own planet.
Ed said this thing in Storytellers that was about the healing power of music, that if you hear a song and you realize somebody was as miserable as you might be feeling at that moment, that then, you know, everybody wins.
Well, I guess,
you know?
Maybe that's the thing, too, is of all of those bands, he was the one guy who didn't. Pearl Jam never seemed like they were putting up a front in any way.
Mm-mm.
Where that everybody else kind of just was wearing the same, you know, it was like a monochromatic costume of, you know, of the time, of the era. And Pearl Jam never seemed that way. They were almost, I remember thinking they almost had like a classic rock band that had just, you know, like they were like a classic rock band making brand new music. These are the top five Pearl Jam songs you are more or less required to love as a fan. Don Taylor?
Number four, Gone.
So I really like this one because it starts out kind of quiet like most of their stuff. Actually, I found that out about myself, that a lot of the stuff that I chose starts out quiet but then really starts kind of, you know, kicking ass eventually.
You like the slow build?
I do, and I noticed that they do that quite a bit. And I especially He has a line in here, he says, nothing is everything. And I really don't know what the heck that means, but it's still pretty awesome, you know. It's, I guess it came from a Pete Townsend song.
I get the feeling, actually, I feel like Eddie Vedder ought to send Pete Townsend, you know, like a Father's Day card.
You know he loves The Who.
Yeah.
I mean, with like...
That was, you know, here's one of the great Pearl Jam moments for me, actually, is... I remember it wasn't. I didn't see them actually live. I mean, they were performing it live, but it was on TV, or I heard it on a bootleg or something. And it was when they played Baba O'Reilly, which, you know, I guess they do a lot. I mean, it was maybe the first time I'd heard them do it, and that was a song that I had just burned out on so long before that. I mean, it had been years since I'd wanted to hear Baba O'Reilly. It was always a song that I was forced to hear or that I was subjected to. And then they, one of their shows, they were just, maybe it was on MTV or something, and they came out, and that was their encore. And it was like the last thing I expected anybody to play in the early 90s, because the early 90s were so much about, you know, so much about discarding rock traditions of the past, and it was, you know, it was a new school where they were not going to do the same things that other bands had done and whatever. And Pearl Jam, that I think is maybe the other reason I really liked Pearl Jam, is that because they didn't just mouth a sort of appreciation of music. I mean, they really seemed to come from... to belong to a long line of artists. I mean, they were part of the progression of music. And anyway, so they just tore into Baba O'Reilly, and it was just awesome. I mean, it was just fantastic. And in a way that you could tell that the band, and especially Eddie Vedder, they just loved it, and that they really understood it.
Well, and they did a really awesome remake of The Real Me that we saw in Cleveland this last, I don't know, whenever that was, May, that it was crazy. It was so good. And just loud, and I mean, you can't even, the way they do remakes, they really put a lot of energy into making it, not just faking it.
Right. Well, and they don't fake it, and they don't play some just carbon copy of the original, because like, what is the point?
Yeah.
They really do.
They did Whip It by Devo too on Halloween night.
I'm sorry, just one moment. How many of those cookies have we had over there, Don?
Well, they're very tiny.
Uh huh. Okay.
I've had, I don't know, six or eight.
It's almost
of them.
Like it takes more energy to eat them than they are actually going to give you.
They're like the chocolate part of the Oreo without the creamy filling.
Hey, have you had those Oreos that are? They're an Oreo with mint icing on the inside, and then they are chocolate. They are frosted with chocolate on one side as well.
Oh, indeed, I have.
What is the story with those? Are they any better? Because the thing is, I always want to like Oreos, and I try them like once a year, and I really can't because they have that kind of weird hint of lard taste
Eddie,
going on.
Eddie's singing.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I was distracted by a thing. These are the top five Pearl Jam songs you are required to like as a fan. In the opinion of Jenny Hieronymus, who is at the bottom of that beer, it looks like.
I don't waste my time. I've told you.
What is number three, Don Taylor?
Number three is present tense.
So can I share about present tense? So, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, I had cancer several years ago. I think I probably wore this song out, like trying to get my head right. And it's pretty good for that.
What is it? Is the song about anything in particular?
Well, living in the moment, you know. And
had you heard the song? Did you already know the song when you started going through the cancer thing, or was it?
Yeah.
Or did you hear it during? Did you hear? Were you
exposed
to it during?
Yeah. I think.
Are you getting something out of this old land?
Especially this part coming up here.
You can spend your time alone, redigesting past regrets. Come to terms and realize you're the only one who can forgive yourself. Oh.
So what year would this have come out, this song?
96.
I always admire, I talk about this with the Stones a lot, that, you know, Pearl Jam's a band that they could just tour the rest of their lives playing stuff off Verses and 10. You know, I mean, that's, you know, especially as they get to be what in the record industry they call a legacy act. You know, the people who first heard them are in their 30s or 40s or whatever. You know, and the fact that they just continue, though, to put out records, you know, up to now, where they obviously put the care and craft into every song, where they're not just trying to. And they also haven't done, they've avoided that thing that so many bands like this do, where they're just trying to write that first album again. You know, like I heard, you know, another type of music altogether, but I heard the new Korn record a few weeks ago, which everybody was sort of talking about. It's a return to form, which always makes me a little suspicious. And it's a return to form in the sense that they've just tried to clone every song off their first album to recapture the whatever, which is, you know, as opposed to just evolving or just, you know, becoming, you're just playing whatever it is they want to be playing now. And Pearl Jam obviously just, they put the maximum effort into what they want to be doing at the moment, as opposed to just trying to retread something.
So be aware of the 3 minute and 30 second mark. It kind of takes off from, like a friend of mine said, oh, I just got on the freeway and the 3 minute and 30 second mark hit of Present Tense. And we all went, oh, you know,
nerd.
I know, it really is. But, yeah, you know, and you said they put everything into it, you know. We heard some super rare B-side opening song in Cleveland that we all went just nuts for. It was fantastic. So are we getting close?
I think so. I don't have a timer on the song over here, but I think we're approaching that.
Here comes the train. Oh, yeah, here we go. In the present.
I love songs that have dynamic shifts like that halfway through.
And it works. That's the thing. A lot of times it doesn't work. Baseline.
Wow, how much does that sound like the Who right there?
Yeah, really. Well, and I'm coming back around to this album, No Code, that this is from. There's a Pearl Jam podcast that I listen to that the guy redid the entire album of No Code all from bootlegs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I need to go back to this, you know, because wow. I get kind of in my groove with, I love Yield, so.
These are the top five Pearl Jam songs you are more or less required to like as a fan, in the opinion of our good friend Jenny. Dawn Taylor, what is number two?
Number two is Parks.
What the fuck is
oh, sorry.
Ah, it's fine.
Leave a message, at least I could have learned your voice one last time. Daily minefield is good. Be my time by you.
I'm gonna stop the song in a second and start it again, because you were talking about fixating on Present Tense and playing it over and over again, and I was thinking about Pearl Jam and the whole etymology of that band and Mother Love Bone, and I remember when I was about, I don't know, I was maybe 19 or 20 or something, and I was going through a lot of bad times in general, not because of anything really dramatic, like it wasn't cancer or anything, it was just, you know, I was just kind of a jerk, and you know, and so my life was going pretty badly, because that's what happens if you're a jerk long enough, and so I was just at that whole, like, what is it all, who am I, what, you know, how have I gotten to this dark moment of my existence? But I had this terrible, horrible, 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 elongated breakup with somebody. It was just like one of those, you know, the kind of like awful breakup that you can really only have when you're about 19 and about half crazy. And I went through this period where I just listened to that song, Chloe Dancer, Crown of Thorns by Mother Love Bone, over and over. I mean, just for like days on end. Anyway, so that happened, and then fast forward a couple of years to my younger brother James, who I hope I'll not be embarrassed by this story, but who had, you know, went through some difficult times of his own and had some issues of his own. And I remember being at I think it was when he was still living at home with my mom, but before he joined the Marines, and he was living at home, and I walked by his bedroom, and he was in his bedroom with like the CD or the whatever this song, and he was not even it wasn't even the whole song. He was just listening to this the opening.
What the fuck is this
over? But over, like the first 40 seconds, like on a loop. And, you know, and that, you know, and that's a thing you don't do with a lot of bands, you know?
Well, who even knows what this song is about? I mean, I don't have a clue, but, you know, when they re-released 10, they released the Unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know, like,
the MTV Unplugged
everybody performance. Totally remembers that because it was just so crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that...
It was manic.
It was so
unbelievable.
Crazy. And like, it was like you had, I felt like there'd been a really long dry spell of music before we had seen anything that was really that kind of like different or refreshing. I mean, because we're coming off the 80s, you know.
I was actually really fortunate after they did the MTV Unplugged special, which would have been, what have been, like 92 maybe, something like that, 93. I mean, it was early in the 90s,
yeah.
I think. And then it wasn't available for a long time. And I was, I worked at a radio station where they'd sent us a copy of it on VHS, which I just treasured for years because you couldn't, you know, before the internet, it was really difficult to find.
I taped mine off of MTV and I still have it from the original viewing.
Really?
I have my VHS tape and it's after it, my now ex-husband taped used cars.
It was around this time that, I've talked about how they would do these warm-up gigs in Spokane before they go on tour. And Eddie Vedder had this thing for a while where he would walk around town, like in his, you know, his like then omnipresent green army jacket, and occasionally wearing, I swear to God, Don, a clown mask, which is maybe not the thing you're going to wear if you're dressing for invisibility, because you get the whole idea, there's a guy in a clown mask and an army jacket. I think it's Eddie Vedder because that was like his thing. He would just occasionally just show up and walk around Spokane in a mask before they would play, but. That was around the era when he would, you know, he would get on stage, and I'm sure this still happens now, but he would get on stage and he would just, Eddie Vedder kind of gets this look on his face, this sort of weird eyes half closed, kind of blissed out sort of look, and it is just one of those where you realize that he is just communicating with some deep part of himself, and that, like, you, the audience, are sort of lucky enough to be able to see it, but that you're sort of incidental.
It's kind of magical.
Yeah.
It really is. I love when they walk out and he's got his little wine bottle and his little notebook that he sets down like really lovingly next to the amp, and kind of the whole ritual of watching that happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like those few moments like when everybody is just going nuts, you
right.
know, before they even like pick up an instrument.
It's I'm you're squinting your
No, I'm actually getting drunk.
Excellent.
You said that this was a high alcohol beer.
I assume.
You weren't kidding around. I've had like a glass of beer, and I'm severely buzzed.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's
thanks.
I find nothing wrong with that statement. You know, this is the sort of tough fiber we can just go on forever because we just nerd out about music fan stuff. It's funny, you mentioned the ritual of Eddie Vedder coming out with his notebook and his wine bottle. This is sort of the same, not really. I've seen Henry Rollins do his spoken word thing, you know, just a million times, and it's, you know, which is always just great. It just makes me feel like a piker. But he does this thing when he comes out, because, you know, he's like Mr. Work Ethic. And so when he comes out, there's no stool, there's no chair, because he's not sitting down, because he's Henry Rollins and he doesn't sit. But there is the microphone, and there is a single bottle of water, which he sometimes opens, sometimes doesn't. But he does this great thing when he comes out. The microphone, which never stays in the stand, he holds it. But he takes the microphone out of the stand, and then he takes the cord, and he doesn't use a wireless, and he doesn't use a lapel mic, he doesn't use a lavalier ever. He takes the microphone out of the stand, he grips it in his hand, and he wraps the cord around his hand three times, which is a thing I think he started doing in Black Flag because they would take the mic from him.
I can almost kind of picture that,
yeah.
You know, from Black Flag.
And he's just standing.
Well, also, he would sweat a lot too, and it was a way to actually keep a grip on the mic when he's sweating.
And now, yeah, it's just a thing he does that is part of, you know, that he doesn't do it as an effect. It's just out of habit. But he comes out looking as he always does, like he's sort of this, like goth, you know, workout guy meets Hitler Youth, you know, sort of standing there and then, you know, and rapping. And then that's, you know, you get that sort of moment of like, aha, it's, you know, it's the
thing that bothers me about the spoken word, though, of Henry Rollins is he keeps his shirt on.
Well,
that's very sad.
That and the last time Lauren and I saw him, he actually spoke for 3 hours and 45 minutes without stopping. And it was just at a certain point, she's like, I'm getting too much for my money. I need to sleep. But anyway, so I'm just a huge sucker for things like that, for ritual and routine and for the hallmarks or trademarks of an artist when they go on stage. I'm just I'm the biggest nerd for stuff like that. These are the top five, and this has been an excellent list, by the way. These are top five Pearl Jam songs in the assessment of listener Jenny Hieronymus. That you are more or less required to like.
And if you don't like it, you're a dick.
you look really
John's liquored.
Seriously, you look really glazed over right now, sister.
I'm a little liquored up,
but it's tasty. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It is tasty beer.
Really,
I'll bring you the holiday ale.
You know, you're not able to do this at that newspaper you were writing for.
Well, I like could, you, but I wasn't know. Supposed to.
I don't know. Just paste it up and shoot it. all right. What is number one, Jenny?
Oh, me.
Yes.
Well, my number one is Given to Fly, which I love.
And this is off Yield, right?
Yes. I could do a top five just of Yield.
What is the, I think Yield's the album that had the song Wish List on it.
No, that was on, oh gosh.
Or on No Code or something.
No, Wish List was, I think they never did that as on an album. It was on a compilation, I think.
Well, all right then. That is the thing that that's one of the first MP3s that I ever had off of the internet. A guy who sent it to me is like, hey, have you heard the new Pearl Jam song? And he sent me the song Wish List, and which is beautiful. But this is from Yield, which was 98.
I love Yield so much. I want to marry it and have its babies. I mean.
To me,
it's a perfect album. Everything on it is perfect. I put things on and took things off the list from Yield. Okay, this part. Made to go together. The words and the music. I mean, obviously, but.
And, you know,
and it's just perfect. It's flawless.
Which is hard to do. I mean, if you know, creating anything is a collaborative effort, or if you just two people is difficult. And with this band, which I think, with the exception of the change in drummers, I think it's still the same lineup.
Yep.
You know, yep. And when you consider he was just.
And they've had Matt for years, 98, I think, Matt Cameron.
And you know, when you consider the fact that Eddie Vedder was just some guy, he was like a security guard or something, and he just—I
have a story about that, but first I don't want to talk over.
You know,
but I know we're running out of time. Oh,
it's just—it's you know, when you consider the fortune of, you know, like in this case of this guy finding this band, which is you know that's a difficult magic to find.
It's a gift.
I'm always sort of interested in singer-songwriters like this that I always wonder what was the point when they realized that they could do this?
Right.
I know. Well, and I don't know. From the very beginning, I mean, I have that thing that I printed out. Where is that?
Because the deal was, I think he found... The band sent him like some instrumental tracks they were working on, and I don't, you know, he'd been in bands and stuff before that. But then I guess the deal was they were sending him out to prospective singers, and they said, you know, just create lyrics over this, sing, you know, use this as the backing.
Went to Jack Irons, who gave them to Ed, who created the lyrics over,
and then sent them back or whatever.
The first three songs were, which I've got here, Alive, Footsteps, and Once.
Yeah,
but
I mean it's.
I mean, and to think that, I don't know, so many things had to happen in order for it to, like, work.
Well, unfortunately,
someone had to die, but...
And as Dom was just saying, you know, that there's that, you know, that moment for Eddie Vedder where he just, at some point where he, you know, you go from being the guy who listens to the thing to being the guy who does the thing.
Yeah, always wondered, because I've known so many people who, whether they were musicians or writers or actors or whatever, who had far more confidence and ego than they had actual talent. And then there are people who are just genuinely phenomenally talented. And I've always been really interested in the whole idea of perception of your own abilities, because some of the most talented people I know have like the worst self-esteem and the most, you know, problems accepting that they're as talented as they are. So I always wonder, it's like if you're somebody like Eddie Vedder and you're sitting around and you're on your own and you're writing songs and you're singing, and obviously at some point he developed his voice. So it's like, at what point did he realize, I
can do this.
I own this amazing gift.
Because he doesn't seem like a guy that's overflowing with self-confidence.
Well, and I also kind of wonder what would have happened if he hadn't found the band, the other guys.
Right.
What would have happened? I mean, he probably would be doing something, I would imagine, but I don't think it would be as fantastic as what's been created over the last, you know, however many, 20 years.
Well,
I mean,
that's just... And when I would, you know, when you see him on stage, I said in those moments where he's almost sort of like drifting and floating off into some other, you know, some other place in his head, you think like, well, what would this guy be doing if he wasn't able to be in music? You know, where does Eddie Vedder go? Excellent. Fantastic list. Well done.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right.
Well, can I thank my friends at 2feetthick.com for the information they
Absolutely.
Gave me? Thank you.
Excellent. All right.
I also want to say happy birthday to Bruce Agler.
That's right. Happy birthday, Bruce Agler.
Happy birthday, Bruce Agler.
God bless you.
Oh, that was like a tongue twister.
You know, Bruce Agler, some of those, he's like, he's an ageless person of mystery. Unlike Sarah Dillon, who turns 50 tomorrow.
Yes.
And so we want to, actually, I guess it's happening, is it Saturday or is it tomorrow?
Saturday.
Okay, her actual birthday is tomorrow. Okay, we're going to have her on the show tomorrow, though.
Yeah.
So Sarah Dillon and Greg Nibbler of Fun Employment Radio will be joining us on tomorrow's program as we welcome her into adulthood at long last.
In the text box, a listener has said, Jenny equals win. Nailed it.
Thank you.
I had no...
Well, Tom Sutton said... Because I was very nervous, and Tom Sutton said, look at it this way, Jenny. If you go and you fail, it's a win for the show. If you go and you win, it's a win for the show.
See, with
it took
that,
all the pressure off.
being armed with that information, you're really now qualified to do this show.
I know.
That really is.
See you next week.
Yeah. No, that's the only knowledge that one needs to acquire to actually be good at doing this program. It's just know that, look, if it sucks, it's actually kind of better. So, you know, don't worry about it. You'll be fine.
Look at how often we fail.
Yeah, well, you know.
Dawn's drunk right now, so, it seems to work. Not just for us and our many platoons of listeners, but also our business partners, such as Squires Electric.
You know we already did an ad for that.
We didn't. We did Castalia instead of Squires Electric. You're drunk. What do you know?
I wrote it down. Okay.
Well, be that as it may. I think you're wrong about that.
You're right. I was wrong.
You're also drunk.
Maybe just buzzed.
This is a little tipsy.
This is the moment where I was actually just about to start this whole thing about, you know, it's about the electrical electricity is complicated, and even if you kind of know what you're doing, it just takes a massive amount of time to make sure that you're doing it correctly so that things work and that you don't end up singeing your body internally. And just as I was about to talk about, you know, electricity is complicated and it can't be dangerous, I looked over and Dom was just tipping the glass back and just finishing off the rest of the alcohol
while I'm fiddling with my laptop.
And it all just seemed to conflate in some. Well, never. Was it like with the actual cord? Like you had to, you went to Think Geek and you were just like, I just need something that works.
Yeah, because the one that I had was shorting out, and then at one point it just burst into flames and this little poof of smoke came off of it, and then it didn't work anymore.
And that's really just for a laptop. really, think about all of the things in your home that work on what Scatman Crothers used to call electricity.
Toaster?
Your toaster oven.
Ceiling, you know, your fans, ceiling fans and floor fans.
Stove.
Stove, refrigerator.
Water heater.
Washer and dryer.
Fish tank.
heating pad.
Personal massager.
Waffle iron.
Rotisserie.
Refrigerator.
Burger fryer thing.
That's a fail right there. That's a, no. We've come.
What's
to
the, his name? George
Foreman Grill.
George Foreman Grill. That's what I was trying to think.
I think that's the end of that. I was just going to see how
that
long.
That's awesome.
In my brain, I was just thinking, what if we're still here an hour from now doing this because we won't stop? But you know, that's. But we figured. But you know, the
pragmatic adjustable bed.
The chain broke itself. All right. Squires Electric.
They are a
brand new business partner. They've been in Portland for 12 years. You can find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com, or you can contact them at 503-252-1609. So, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, and the odds are good that you probably do not.
Or if you've been drinking.
Or, you know, frankly, if you just got places to be, if you just don't want to be bothered at this point in your life, you know, like maybe you understand how the electricity in your home works. Maybe you know how to fix it. Maybe you know how to repair it. But you just think to yourself, you know, that's time that I could just be sitting, you know, just spooning fatty foods into my mouth and, you know, and clipping my toenails. You contact Squires Electric and you know that they're going to come to your house, they're going to come to your business, and they're going to make sure it's done right, and they're going to make sure it's done right the first time as well. Because there's nothing worse. It's like you pay a guy to fix a thing, and then the thing still doesn't work. You know, and then you have to call the guy and you go, you didn't fix the thing. And he goes, no, I think we got taken care of. And you're like, I'm flipping the switch, man. It's not working. It's not fit. Come back. Which I've had to do, and it's always right as you need it. It happened with my furnace one year, just as we were going into winter. The guy comes to the house, and he claims he fixes the furnace, then he leaves, furnace totally not fixed. You know, and then as I see the sun vanishing over the horizon and a chill filling the air, you realize that you're out the money, and you're out the thing actually working, and then you have to start the whole process over again. So you contact somebody that'll do it correctly the first time, and that somebody is Joe Squires and his company, Squires Electric. There's no job too small, and they do free estimates. You can find out upfront about what it's going to run you, and they've done everything from a single light socket to an entire building. So you write this down, you contact them for all of your home or office wiring needs, wiring of any kind, whether it's installing, removing, fixing, repairing, anything like that. 503-252-1609, Squires Electric. All right, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It was,
it was my pleasure.
It was really, really great, actually. And not that I expected it to be anything else.
I was very nervous.
It was what, in the kitchen, you just said, like, I'm just sitting here and sweating and racked with nerves.
I think I'm going to throw up.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic. And really, and all kidding aside, no fooling. I also want to thank you and the whole collective for being just such diehard fans of the show, and for always sort of all, you know, kind of going the extra mile and beyond. It really does. It does mean a great deal.
Well, you guys make it easy.
Oh, well,
you're easy to love.
Let's all hug inside.
Yeah.
Inside. Hugging inside sounds like something else, actually. Let's
That's
not
what
do
mommy
that.
And daddy do to make a baby.
She's Jenna Hieronymus, kids. You can find her on Facebook. All right. Fantastic. Does your husband, now, I don't know if you can, you probably can't sell homemade beer, right? Or can you? I was going to ask, is this fine beer that he makes, is this elixir available?
I wish, but no.
That's
he
the thing
just,
you can do.
He gives it away to people that we like.
In fact, you may have broken the law just by bringing it here.
Oh, my God. That's right. Isn't there a law here about doing that?
Yeah.
We're going to end the show now.
You know what? F the man.
There you go. That's Jenny who said that, by the way. Rick Emerson respects authority in all of its many forms. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Konakoa. We want to thank our guest Jenny Hieronymus and author Bill Carter. After a brief musical interlude, the Legion of News Encore Edition begins, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We'll see you again tomorrow at 12 o'clock for Legion of News and 1 o'clock for the Rick Emerson Show. It is Thursday, October 7th, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye now.